The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mock my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. Your normal host, Tim D-O-double-G, is on his way to sunny, warm climates. So in his stead, PCN underscore Dirt and myself, Agent underscore 70, are running the show tonight. Say what's up to everybody, Dirt.
All right, I got my lower third going the old school way.
There you go. For whatever reason, for the second consecutive week, or at least for a few weeks running now.
Yeah, right. It's been several weeks. I haven't been able to get it working.
Dirt has not been able to get the lower third for the fans of the Comic Chronicles who are taking this in as video. There's a lower third that has a banner of some of our contact information. Dirt hasn't been able to get his running. But if you were able to see it, and if you can see what Dirt is holding up now, you can reach Dirt at PCN underscore Dirt on Twitter.
If you can read my horrible handwriting.
You can reach myself at Agent underscore 70 on Twitter. Our normal lead host, Tim D-O-double-G 98, you can reach on Twitter at Tim D-O-G-G 98. And at The Click Nation. And bringing up the rear is Roddy Cat at Roddy Cat on Twitter. And he leads the great news Twitter feed at News Nerds Need. I totally butchered that because I can't remember like half of the things that we plug. I'm trying to remember it as best I can. Please visit the Click Nation website at www.theclicknation.com. Visit Dirt's website. Dirt, take it away with your website plug.
You can find me at popculturenetwork.com.
Yes, thank you. Because, you know, I need some coffee at this point.
That's what the PCN stands for. See, Pop Culture Network.
At this point, ladies and gentlemen, we are starting very, very late because we experienced some technical difficulties on my end because I don't get to do this all the time.
People are lucky there's a show.
Mm.
Like, even if we end it now, it's still 100% better than it was 30 minutes ago.
Oh, mercy. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. So then... what else? Oh, and please check out the Cold Slither Podcast Network, which is the umbrella network. We are a member of the Cold Slither Podcast Network family. You can check out all the other podcasts that are members of the family at coldslitherpodcast.com, like the Chicken and Jollof Rice Show and the Baker Bone and Rome Bad Advice Show and so many of the other shows. Yes. Well, you have to listen and find out because I haven't listened to find out yet.
Mm-hmm. That's how they get you. Those cliffhangers.
So, anyway, we are, and we're actually going to have, sooner rather than later, because we're starting so late, we're going to have a special guest on tonight, an old friend of the podcast, Matt Wang, 97 on Twitter, is going to be recapping his personal experiences at San Diego Comic-Con, which just passed this past week. I'm going to be turning down all the beeping that people are probably hearing in the background because these are all our hangout.
I just typed a message. Sorry about that.
You know, it's just funny. But turning down all the volume. But yeah, we're going to have Matt Wang on later on in the show. I guess we're going to start with some of the items that have dropped in the last week since the last show, and most of that is going to be from San Diego. So, Dirt, if you wouldn't mind, starting us off, you know, you can pick and choose. You don't have to delve into every single piece of news, but some of the stuff that might be really interesting.
All right. Well, one thing I'm kind of excited for is that Laura Vandervoort, who played Supergirl on Smallville, is in talks to be on CBS's Supergirl in some sort of cameo role.
Sure. It's a small world after all.
Yeah. So it may end up being one of those things where, you know, she's a reporter on the news or something and is there for 5 minutes and you never see her again.
Exactly.
Or it could end up being like Brandon Routh on Arrow, where he ends up playing a character that becomes a big part of the story and spins off into something else. So,
right.
Another one I'm excited for is that Machinima has picked up an exclusive Transformers animated cartoon show. I guess animated cartoon, right? As opposed to
right.
live-action animated
mm-hmm.
stuff. But this one is specifically geared towards older viewers. So instead
no
of kid-friendly shows that we've been getting for the last few years, this one is based off the current Combiner Wars toys. If you've been into a toy shop at all, the Combiner Wars figures come with an IDW comic book actually in the package.
Right.
And it's called Combiner because you can actually take the figures and piece them together in order to make a giant robot. And this storyline has been running in the comics. They've got the toys, and now this series on Machinima is actually going to be tying into that universe. Machinima is a website. I believe it started with making animated shorts using video game engines. That's what Machinima technically means.
Okay.
So it's like when you watch people do Minecraft videos, where it's doing a cartoon show. It's all just they're using Minecraft as the animated system in order to have the characters and the location and everything. But it's grown into this huge site that does a lot of video game reviews and video game question and answer. And some of the guys left recently and started a second website. It's like roosterteeth.com, I think. But Machinima itself has always been this place where you can find game trailers and game reviews and stuff like that. So it's just another growing online network that we're seeing all over the place. Another network and an exclusive online show. Kind of like Joe Dirt 2 being exclusive to Crackle. There's a plug for Joe Dirt 2. You didn't think was coming, but there it was.
you got me, Dirt. You're really not kidding about Joe Dirt 2, are you?
Look, my birthday is July 23rd, so I'm considering this a birthday gift to me from David Spade and Dennis Miller is Joe Dirt 2.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's see.
Funny.
Some other news coming up. The Archie Riverdale drama is being moved to the CW.
Apparently this made it into the news section because you would love this. And that's a note from Roddy.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, I see little notes popping up.
Yes.
This is a show that the one comic tie-in show I don't think I'm even going to go for the pilot. I'm going to let that one go completely by.
All right. So I'll take this one. The actor Neil McDonough, who we've seen appear in many, many movies, but comic book fans will know him as Dum-Dum Dugan from Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Captain America, The First Avenger, and from Agent Carter episodes. He is now cast in Arrow as Damian Dark, the villain. And apparently it's Dum Dum Darkens. That's Roddy's commentary on that.
When you pronounce it, is it pronounced Dark or is it pronounced Dar-Hawk?
You know what? Honestly, that's always been a question in my mind. Never bothered to ask anyone for clarification. I'm hoping that someone clears that up before the show really comes. You know,
right.
Hopefully we'll hear it in like a video or a TV show or something.
All right, let's see. Running through some of these a little more quickly. Coming up on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, we're going to get David Tennant, Michael Dorn, and whoever Peter Stormare is. I'm not sure who that is.
I recognize Lieutenant Worf. That's about it.
Yeah, well, David Tennant was one of the Doctor Who people.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't tell you which one or anything. I just know he's a Doctor Who. A Whovian.
Gotcha.
Blind Al has been cast in Deadpool. Leslie Uggams.
Okay.
Whoever, how you pronounce that?
Not me.
This one is weird. This one is very weird to me. Joe Quesada came out and he said he's seen the designs for the new Spider-Man costume, for the new Spider-Man movie, and he says it will blow you away.
When I read that, I thought back to the most recent iteration of the costume we've seen in the movies, the Amazing Spidey 2 costume. I thought that was as close as we're going to get.
I thought the new, not the Tobey Maguire one, I always thought was way overdone for something a kid was supposed to have put together.
Right.
And I thought the new ones, at least, they looked a little extra fancy, but they still were kind of in that realm where I could, you know, I could buy it, whatever, sure. You know,
right.
he spent a lot of money on it, but mm-hmm. whatever, you could do that. But apparently this one is supposed to look like something a teenager would actually put together himself, and he says it's going to be the most classic, real version of a Spider-Man costume you will ever see.
Interesting.
So
interesting.
I'm getting flashbacks to the Electric Company TV show and that sort of suit, and I don't know.
Maybe. All righty. So the our next bit of news is also Marvel TV related. It's Lash, the Inhuman, that was introduced in the newest Inhuman series that actually is gone the way of the Dodo. You know, we don't know if it's going to be reincarnated in all new, all different Marvel, but Lash, the character who is a member of a group of Inhumans that exist outside of Attilan. This character is going to be joining the cast, has been cast as the main antagonist in the next season of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, you know, that's something cool. And obviously, we're moving headlong into Inhumans and getting them integrated into the Marvel cinematic universe.
Yeah, they got to make people care about Inhumans.
Yeah,
because they definitely don't want them like in the X-Men.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's see, San Diego Comic Con. We got news that Jay Garrick will appear in the Flash TV show. If you remember, Jay Garrick was the original Golden Age version of the Flash.
Oh, we've already seen the teaser of that character.
The one with the World War I helmet with the little wings on it.
Exactly.
Let's see. CW is basically pushing now that Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, it's all one big block of superhero stuff on the CW, so they're weaving them all together, making it clear that you're going to follow them. They want you to follow them the same way that people follow the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We'll see how it works. Oh, we found out at San Diego Comic-Con that Ash versus Evil Dead is going to be getting a Halloween premiere. So people looking forward to that movie.
Sure.
Another Evil Dead film. Lucifer, the TV series based off the Vertigo comic series from DC. It's apparently set to take place in between Sandman and the Lucifer series.
Blasphemy on television. I love it.
The thing with Sandman is it had such a very loose, you know, kind of outer layer to the storyline of what was actually happening. And I don't really understand why you would need to clarify where this TV series sits, because I don't know if anybody was really worried about that, but I guess you just have to do it for whatever reason. Con Man. Do you know anything about the show Con Man that's being talked about?
Not at all.
Vimeo On Demand is going to be premiering Con Man Wednesday, September 30th. While that pulls up, though, I will note there is an app everybody can download. It's on iOS. It's on Android. It's on the Amazon Fire TV is where I got it. It's mm-hmm. called Pluto TV. And Pluto TV is basically a bunch of different internet streams, video streams, put together as TV channels. So there's like a Minecraft channel. There's an 80s music channel. There's a headline news channel. One of the channels they added this week was the Comic-Con channel. And basically all the panels from Comic-Con that they have video of, they've turned into a channel.
Huh.
So I actually was able to watch the Batman versus Superman panel, the Deadpool panel, you know, basically anything they had cameras at, they've got up there. Now, they had to cut out the Batman versus Superman trailer that premiered there. They had to cut out the Deadpool trailer from, you know, being on there. But still, if you want to go and watch those panels from Comic-Con, you can download the Pluto TV app. And on Fire TV, it's great because you just load it up. Fire TV comes with a little remote, and it's just like watching a regular TV, like through your cable box or whatever. You're just flipping channels and go through all this stuff.
Sure.
But anyway, all right.
That's awesome. I mean, you know what's funny is that it's probably further on in the in the news, and we can also talk about, I presume that you've already watched these trailers, the
yes.
ones that have been released, so we'll talk about them. Alrighty. So apparently they're first pics of Jon Bernthal on the set of Daredevil. I still don't know where they're shooting. I'm going to have to stalk this Daredevil shooting in the city, see if I can get on set.
Con Man, okay, going back to this TV show, Con Man, mm-hmm. it centers on the post-show life of Ray Nearly, the co-star of Spectrum, a sci-fi series which was canceled before its time and went to become a cult classic beloved by fans. His good friend Jack Moore starred as the series captain and has gone on to become a major celebrity, while Ray hasn't found that level of stardom. He's the guest of sci-fi conventions, comic book store appearances, and different pop culture events. However, everything is not as it seems from the outside. It will explore the weird and crazy things that happen at these things along the way. So basically, Nathan Fillion from Firefly,
And
is the captain of the show, of this cult classic sci-fi show that was canceled way before his time, and this guy was a guest star who just didn't get that same level of fame out of it, and now he's spending his life going to Comic-Cons and sci-fi conventions and all of that. So that's Con Man. So basically, if you remember wrestling superstar Virgil, used to make all of those comic book show appearances.
Sure.
We're going to get the TV version of a sci-fi actor doing that circuit.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely.
There you go. Although if they would do a reality show with Virgil, I'd probably watch that.
All right. I'm going to skip over the next bit of news because it's the Bruce Timm related news that I just wanted to speak about briefly. So Bruce Timm at San Diego Comic-Con confirms that he is helping do a Killing Joke animated film. And I'm not sure how I feel about this, seeing that story told in animated form. I don't know if it's going to be in the classic, Batman the Animated Series animation style, or if it's going to be in the newer, you know, slightly more, modernized, you know, animation style. But
one thing that
just the story itself, you know?
One thing that DC's been doing with a lot of the animated films is that if there is a specific artist who worked on them, then they try to incorporate that style. You're right. So they did that with Dark Knight Returns. Some of the early Justice League stuff that they set up with Flashpoint and whatever had kind of that Jim Lee design vibe to it. So
Even the Michael Turner stuff too from I forget which series it was, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. So Brian Boland though has a very unique, very detailed style that would be very hard, I think, to translate.
So. Yeah.
But the one thing I'm worried about though is that Killing Joke as a comic series is one of those that has seen a lot of pushback in the last year or so, especially because of that Joker variant cover that they were going to do based on the series. And so I'm a little worried about how they might neuter the story in order to make it out there for the masses. I mean, if they leave it completely untouched, I'll be incredibly happy, but then you're going to get all these, you know, SJWs getting all mad and protesting outside the headquarters of the studios and, you know, whatever. So I'm a little worried, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to feel about that yet. I'll have to see maybe some preview animation for it. All righty, here we are. We said we were going to talk about it, the Batman versus Superman trailer. What did you think about it, Dirt?
I think a couple of the acting choices still don't come across the way they probably should.
Okay.
But as far as the intensity, the effects, the action, I mean, it looks like it's going to be another huge blockbuster as far as people wanting to see, you know, superheroes punching things and stuff going up. It looks fun. And one of the things that I heard a lot of people upset with, a little bit with Man of Steel and way more with Superman Returns, is that there just wasn't a lot of that action. You had like one or two big battles and that was really it. This looks like there's a lot more action, a lot more battles, a lot more explosions.
Right.
So people will be happy with that. I still don't like Affleck. Still not buying it. And Eisenberg doing Lex Luthor just doesn't work for me at all.
It does. There's something off. There's just something off about how
voice.
He sounds. Yes, about how he sounds.
Yeah.
It's about how he sounds.
His voice breaks. It still sounds like he's hitting puberty in the middle of this. I get the long hair thing because for the longest time in the Superman lore, Superman was trying to stop an accident from an experiment that Lex Luthor was working on. They made his hair fall out, whatever. So
and he held a grudge, you know, forevermore after that.
So yeah. I'm fine if they're going to do something with that. Having him with long hair does not bother me, but it's just his voice is just so. It doesn't sound menacing at all. I mean, even when he's trying to sound scary and trying to sound deep, it just doesn't work for me. So,
see, I'll tell you that my biggest critique, and, you know, I guess I'm in the minority. Maybe I'm just a Marvel fanboy at heart. I don't get a sense of joy in seeing this on the screen. It's almost like, you know, I almost dread seeing them just kind of go at each other. I mean, it's cool. It's dramatic. I just don't have that sense of joy of seeing them on the screen. I don't know what it is.
It kind of depends on how it's going to play out, because Man of Steel ended very very intense.
Right.
And very somber.
Right.
So the question is this one going to end on that same note, or is this one going to end as kind of like save the world,
together,
the sun
right.
comes over the mountains, we're forming a new team, let's go right. save the world, and that may be how it transitions into that type of thing. They can do a movie. It can be 2.5 hours long. Mm-hmm. 2 hours and 25 minutes can be dark, depressing, fighting, whatever, and then that last 5 minutes, color fills the screen, they all survive, they're cleaning right. each other off, they're ready to form this new alliance, and then you walk out happy. You know, and that's not a problem. So.
Possibly. But yeah, I mean, I'm just saying that just seems to me to be like the overriding just sense that I have from watching that trailer and the other big DC trailer that was released, that they ended up releasing because people leaked it from Comic-Con, you know, idiots who taped it with their phones. So, but we'll get to that too. Let's see here.
The Fantastic Four movie is not going to get a 3D conversion. That's been canceled.
Wait. Moving on.
I can tell you this, though. My son is really looking forward to Fantastic
what?
Four.
What?
He is.
Where have you gone wrong, Dirt? Where have you gone wrong?
Well, I mean, he loves Human Torch. He loves the character, so that helps. But he saw the trailer for it, and he thinks it looks great. And that's probably more of the market that they're pushing for with that. Not 30-year-olds, not 40-year-olds.
Right. Not the choir they're trying to preach to, right?
Right. The 10-year-olds, the 12-year-olds, the 15-year-olds are more where they're aiming on that, which you need that market.
Sure.
I mean, they got to do something for those guys, too. So.
Sure. Well, we'll see how that goes. It's not much longer until it comes out, so.
Yeah.
Let's see.
There's a Green Lantern Corps movie that'll probably come out after you turn 50, so not that big a deal.
Good call.
Let's see. They finally released the trailer for the Vixen animated series.
Right. I did not watch that, though, unfortunately.
I have a feeling that's one of those things. It's going to be on CW Seed, which means like 10 people will watch it.
Right.
But once it flows through there and it gets on Amazon Prime and Netflix, that's when people are really going to pay attention to it, and it'll do really well. Let's see, Arrow Season 4, they've announced that Anarchy and Mr. Terrific will both appear, which is interesting to me because Anarchy has always been a Batman-centric villain.
Right.
So seeing him on there is a little awkward, but whatever.
Right.
And The Flash, this is really weird. Barry is going to get lightning powers in Season 2, they've announced.
Have they elaborated as to... I mean, like, obviously it's a tease, you know, and they want us to tune in to find out. But that's kind of like, well, we've never seen him have a projectile type, you know, aspect to the Speed Force.
He does something new with his powers that's really exciting to me. We've never done it before. It's pretty different than anything else we've done before. It involves lightning.
Okay.
So I mean, the only thing I can guess is maybe he's going to go so fast that he just turns into the ripple of energy and becomes the lightning bolt flipping through, and I could kind of see maybe that being what they're doing. If he starts shooting bolts out of his fingers or something, that's going to be a problem.
Mm.
Of course, Zoom has been revealed in the Comic-Con reel as being the villain for Season 2. We've got Wally West coming to Season 2. Let's see, if we jump over to Supergirl, we're getting a Maxwell Lord. We're also getting Livewire and Reactron, which Reactron is not a character I'm really all that familiar with.
Okay.
Hawkman is going to be appearing in the Legends of Tomorrow. They've cast the other half of Firestorm in Legends of Tomorrow as someone
hold on. Question. Why didn't they already have two halves of Firestorm? yes, no, maybe so.
Jay Jackson, ex-athlete whose career was ended by... Okay, let's see. Jackson is the last person Professor Stein wants to share Firestorm with. I think all they announced was the guy playing Professor Stein.
Right, so Ronnie Raymond's not going to be... It's not going to be Ronnie Raymond, I guess? Did they write him out of the show already or something? Or?
Well, there have been several Firestorms, several people who have combined to be Firestorm over the years, so...
Right, but we just had one. On the Flash show, right? So why change it so quickly? I don't know.
The answer is yes and no. And,
there's always a yes.
And a maybe.
Oh, boy. That's funny.
Yeah, okay, so moving on, Marvel Animation has previewed a new Guardians, an Ultron Revolution, and a Sinister Six.
Okay.
So if you're looking forward to any of those. Lady Sif will appear in the next Thor movie, Thor Ragnarok.
Just confirm that, yes.
Gambit movie logo has been revealed at San Diego. Does anybody care about a Gambit movie in 2015?
Listen, I think there was like a big hubbub when they all the Fox Marvel characters took a big selfie with Stan Lee. That's probably the only the only shine that they're going to get as a group, and it's probably the only shine that the Gambit film's going to get for a while.
And the Gambit logo is just basically a playing card turned sideways with the name Gambit written where the design would normally be in the back. That's all it is.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, they're sticking with the playing card thing, so I guess that's something you can go with. Regular Show is getting a movie. The trailer has been released. The Danger Mouse movie is including Lena Headey and John Oliver. So,
some
names you don't expect for Danger Mouse. But
yes, okay. Seriously.
Although, that's kind of reminds me of the Rocky and Bullwinkle movie, when they announced some big actors in that, and we know how that one turned out.
So. Yeah.
Let's see. Suicide Squad trailer was the other trailer from Comic-Con.
Now, what did you think about that, Dirt?
I really enjoyed that trailer.
I thought that there was more to this trailer than there was to the Batman. I just thought there was more to digest and more to enjoy.
A lot of people are still freaking out about Joker. They don't like his look. Whatever.
Really?
I think the look is fine. I think the character is fine.
It's recognizable, and I think that's the key.
Yeah. Well, and it's a different version. And one of the main things I always hear from people is they always want to talk about Nicholson and the original Batman. And part of the thing with that for me has always been, I've never really felt like that was the Joker. Mm-hmm. That was Jack Nicholson playing the Joker, not the Joker. Because you can't have a movie with Jack Nicholson and get away from Jack Nicholson. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's coming in, he's playing the Joker, he's doing it differently. You had Heath Ledger doing Joker, he did it differently. Just the Joker is one of those characters that you can do 100 different ways. He's done 100 different ways in the comics. They can do them differently in the movies. I'm fine. I thought the trailer looked great. I love the action in it. I thought a lot of the comedy that they kind of mixed in with the action was fun. Made the movie look like it was going to be a fun, enjoyable action, Die Hard-esque type movie. So
sure.
So I'm looking forward to it. But the trailer was originally filmed by somebody on their cell phone. They leaked it online.
Right.
Once it's online, you can't pull it back. They tried for days, like 2 or 3 days, just everywhere online, trying to pull it down. They just couldn't get it off the internet. So finally, Warner Brothers just said, fine, we weren't ready to release it everywhere yet, but here it is. And they put the high-definition version out there, and it looks great. As far as I'm concerned, I'm more looking forward to Suicide Squad than I am looking forward to Dawn of Justice.
I'm inclined to agree. I think that we're going to see the Joker for maybe a tenth of the movie.
Right.
I think that we're probably going to see a lot of Will Smith running around without the Deadshot mask on. and we're going to get a lot of Harley Quinn. I think those are the two characters that are leading the way, and for good reason.
Yeah, well, and you'll probably get Will Smith in his street clothes for about half of the movie.
Right.
Then they go in for the big, action piece in the middle of the film. He puts on the suit, jumps through a window, shoots a bunch of guys, runs down a flight of stairs, takes off the mask to see what's going on, never puts it back on again.
Right.
That's going to be my bet on that. But whatever.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's exactly how it played out, so.
Guillermo del Toro, who was behind the Hellboy movies and Pan's Labyrinth and other weird kind of films like that, he says he wants a Jabba the Hutt movie. Now, if there's someone who could do a Jabba the Hutt movie, it's probably him. But he's probably the only person in the universe that could pull off a movie. Otherwise, it makes absolutely no sense. But he's the one guy that could probably make it work. But that's just, I don't know, weird. Captain Cold's father is going to be joining The Flash this season, Michael Ironside. And this last bit of news in this section here is that Constantine may make an appearance on Arrow just to keep the character alive in the hearts and minds of all the fans.
I love it.
So, but the show, Constantine, has been officially canceled. It is gone, dead, nobody wanted it, it's over, time to move on.
Huh.
Okay, so that is a lot of cinematic news, TV news from San Diego Comic-Con, which is really the focus of San Diego Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like San Diego, like first it was San Diego Comic-Con, then it was Comic-Con International, now it's San Diego Comic-Con International. I kind of think they should split two shows, have San Diego Comic-Con, and that's your comics, your writers, artists, vendors, and then they should do Comic-Con International, And that's where you get the cast of Walking Dead, the cast of Arrow, the cast of Flash, you know, everybody in the new Avengers movie. And they should do a separate thing with those, with no vendors, no sales, nothing. It's just a media blitz that fans come to. That should be Comic-Con International. San Diego Comic-Con should go back to being an actual comic convention.
You know what's funny, Dirt? I don't know if you happen to see this. I saw it posted today. It was actually – I don't know if Roddy had a chance to put this on the news sheet, but there's an article on Grantland. You know, it's an offshoot of ESPN.com. And the comic book writer Van Jensen wrote a piece about what the current state of Comic-Con International, specifically San Diego Comic-Con, is. And it was, you know, he had a lot of interesting takes, especially from a professional's point of view, who's been exhibiting and participating in San Diego Comic-Con for years and years, and how there's a little bit of an ebb in the movie business's interest in just putting on displays at Comic-Con. You know, some people seem to think that, you know, maybe it was a little bit of a lesser presence this year because of the way the Marvel cycle of movies happened to fall. And there was, you know, this may be like the lull before it ramps up again when phase three really kicks in. So, there were a couple of interesting bits there. So I would suggest that anyone interested in reading a professional's take on the current state of San Diego Comic-Con, check out Grantland.com and look for an article written by Van Jensen, who's currently writing, I believe he's writing The Flash. Does that sound right, Dirt? I don't want to misinform, but he's definitely writing for DC, so that part is correct.
You lost me at offshoot of ESPN.com.
Oh no! That's funny.
Let's see here. Is he doing Green Lantern?
Well, maybe it is Green Lantern. I thought it was The Flash, but it could be Green Lantern.
Let's see. He did some issues of The Flash. Green Lantern Corps, it looks like, is what he's doing now.
There you go. But like I said, Dirt, you know, when you have a chance...
He is taking over The Flash, yeah.
Ah, see?
Okay.
So, like I said, when you have a chance to check that out, please do so, because it was an interesting take on what San Diego's like now. All right, where are we on the news? Are we in the comic book announcements?
Yeah, we're finally solicits to comic stuff.
Yeah, I was about to say, we can skip over the solicits. There's a lot of solicit stuff coming out.
Yeah, let's save solicit stuff for some other time.
Yeah. All righty. Comic news.
Oh, boy. I think we can kind of pick and choose through a bunch of these, because as exciting as it is that there's a spy versus spy book coming, I don't know that that's really news we need to...
Come on, Hubaka the cookie. Do the Hubaka the cookie. You really don't get the Hubaka the cookie reference? That was a Muppet Babies reference, people.
My mic cut out there for a second. I couldn't
Hubaka
talk.
Hubaka the cookie.
Okay, one of these pieces of news here, Iron Man partners with a drone in a new Marvel
He skipped over the Hubaka the cookie. I'm going to say it then. So Marvel has announced the Chewbacca limited series by Jerry Duggan and Phil Noto. Boom!
Which will fill that slot, the Lando slot, the Princess Leia. It's going to fall into that off-week book.
That's funny.
All right, let's see here. Lady Killer is coming back for another series. That was, I believe, the one that was like the housewife who ends up being an assassin. Hudlin and Cowan say that Christopher Priest is going to be part of Milestone 2.0, working on those comics, which I don't know if it's on here or not. There was one of the panels at San Diego Comic-Con was talking about Milestone, and one of the guys who was co-creator of Static Shock was talking about the fact that his name is never included when they talk about Static Shock, and he based the character, the sister Sharon, I think it was, based off his own sister.
Okay.
And he talks to his kids, and he talks to his family, and he's always trying to point this out, but if you go and look at the cartoon series, his name is never on it. They're talking about a live-action movie. His name is never on it. He never gets any credit for being a part of Milestone, never gets credit for being a part of creating Static Shock. And it was just this really sad story coming out of San Diego Comic-Con. I think it was on Bleeding Cool, which, you know, of course has everything. But anyway. Did you watch The Legend of Korra? Did you watch the Legend of Korra series? Okay, well, Dark Horse announces that they're coming out with a new Legend of Korra series. It's going to be continuing that animated series, which was also, I believe, a spinoff of Airbender, Avatar. DC is going to be doing a 75 years of Robin anniversary.
Really?
They've done Batman, they've done Flash, they've done Joker, They're doing Green Lantern coming up soon, and they're going to be doing Robin. So he's going to be one of the new ones. So what they always do with those is they have the month of variant covers. Rodney says that the milestone thing is on the other sheet in the dock.
I forgot we have multiple sheets in the dock. Man, I need...
There's a third, yes, okay, the third sheet.
Yes. We have multiple
Michael sheets. Davis, that's his name. Michael Davis is the guy who helped create Static Shock that gets none of the credit for it.
No shine.
All right.
My computer has ground to a screeching halt.
Okay.
With all the tabs and emails and whatnot that we've got flying around because we're running this show this week. I love it.
Jeff Johns is slated to do a whole bunch of Justice League Gods and Men one shot. Gods and Men is going to be the animated series coming out soon.
Okay.
That's based in the alternate universe, another part of the old 52, I guess.
The whole 52.
And so Jeff Johns is going to be doing the character one-shots on a bunch of those. They have a digital series that's out now, but this is apparently going to be something different.
All right.
Agents of Atlas is going to be returning for Secret Wars.
That's awesome.
So you're going to get them back.
That's awesome.
DC announces Superman, Lois and Clark, Titans Hunt, Telos, Superman, American Alien, and Coming of the Superman featuring Neil Adams. So a bunch of Superman specials and tie-ins and Elseworlds and whatever. You're going to get a bunch of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Marvel says that their relaunch after Secret Wars will begin with Avengers Zero.
Yes, that I did see.
And the Avengers Zero will have stories from the all-new, all-different Avengers, Squadron Supreme, A-Force, New Avengers, Ultimates, and Uncanny Avengers. So apparently all of those books are going to be tying into the universe together. IDW has announced a new Star Trek series. They're going to be doing a Starfleet Academy series, talking about all the characters and their formidable years as they interact at Starfleet. IDW is going to be doing a Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles crossover series, which, as far as I know, from everything I've seen, this is just a random
one-off
out-of-continuity Batman. This is just a Bruce Wayne, guy with a lot of money, Batman, not part of Scott Snyder's world. It's not Jim Gordon in a suit. It's not anything like that. It's just random. IDW apparently has also gotten the rights to do Micronauts and ROM.
See, I don't know how to feel about this. I have mixed emotions about this because I love how ROM was integrated into the Marvel Universe. Micronauts, not so. I mean, I read that, but I wasn't as enamored with it as I was with ROM. And to get this news, and Roddy Cat and I were discussing this over the week. I'm glad to see ROM come back, but it's going to be very tough to see ROM come back minus that supporting cast that had been established, by Bill Mantlow and drawn by Sal Buscema for so many issues in the Marvel Universe. It's going to be very tough to read that and have basically the ROM story rebooted, and that's going to be very tough to digest.
All right, we've got the 2015 Eisner Awards. I'm just going to quickly run through just the winners. I'm not going to name everybody in every category, but best short story was When the Darkness Presses by Emily Carroll.
Okay.
Best single issue is Beasts of Burden, Hunters and Gatherers by Evan Dorkin and Jill Thompson for Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
Best continuing series is Saga.
Okay.
Best limited series is Little Nemo, Return to Slumberland, which is actually one my son read and he really enjoyed. Best new series was Lumberjanes. Best publication for early readers is The Zoo Box, which I had never heard of, but okay. Somehow, best publication for early readers and best publications for kids are two different groups. So best publication for kids is El Defo, which again, okay.
You got me.
Best publication for teens is, again, Lumberjanes. Best humor publication is The Complete Cul-de-Sac by Richard Thompson, which is one of my wife's favorite comics of all time, actually, Cul-de-Sac. Best digital/web comic is The Private Eye by Brian Vaughn and Marcos Martin, which is part of their pay whatever you want to get it. You can pay like a nickel if you want to read it, or you can pay $1,000 if you want to read it. That's just what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Best anthology, Little Nemo, Dream Another Dream. Best reality-based work is The Hip Hop Family Tree Volume 2.
Yeah! Congrats, Ed Piscor.
Best graphic album, new, is This One Summer, which I hadn't heard of. Best graphic album reprint was Through the Woods. Best archival collection is Winsor McKay's Complete Little Nemo. Best archive collection / project comic books at least 20 years old is the Steranko Nick Fury Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Artist Edition.
That was beautiful. I fully intend to pick that up, Dirt. If you have a spare one in the store, let me know.
The one that's like $80?
Yeah, it's the big, you know, it's the big artist.
The hardcover. Yes. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yes, if you happen to have, it may be more than $80, but
I don't think we have any of those left, but I might still be able to get my hands on one.
Sure enough.
Best U.S. edition of international material is Black Sad Amarillo.
All right.
Your Dark Horse. Best U.S. edition of international material from Asia specifically is the Showa 1939 to 1944 and Showa 1944 to 1953, A History of Japan.
Okay.
Best writer is Gene Luen Yang for Avatar The Last Airbender.
Gene Luen Yang, isn't he now writing Superman? Is that the same gentleman?
Oh, I don't know. Do a Google search. Best writer/artist is Regina Talmeyer for Sisters. Best penciler/inker is Fiona Staples on Sawdust.
Yeah, Gene Luen Yang
is doing Superman.
Correct. He started with Superman 41. He started with the Truth storyline.
Okay. All right. Well, that's been pretty good. Best painter/multimedia artist for interior art is J.H. Williams III for doing Sandman Overture. Mm-hmm. Even though he only got 3 issues out in the last 2 years, it was supposed to be whatever.
Listen, you as a comic book retailer absolutely know that pain. You know, the shop that I frequent, that I give my business to, you have no idea how many people, you know, come in asking for some of these titles. And like, yeah, you know, it hasn't come out in X number of months because of whatever. It must be heartbreaking.
Sandman Overture was coming out around the same time as the Watchmen Begins, whatever that was. Remember when they did those Watchmen
prequels? It was like a monthly event or something like that, like a couple months of prequel things. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, that was back in that era.
Jeez.
When that was supposed to come out. Best cover artist was Darwin Cook for the month that he did all the variant covers. All
right.
Best coloring is Dave Stewart, who does all the Hellboy stuff for Dark Horse. Best lettering is Stan Sakai for Usagi Yojimbo. Best comics-related periodical/journalism is comicsalliance.com. Figure that out. Best mm-hmm. comic-related book is Genius Animated, The Cartoon Art of Alex Toth, Volume 3.
All right.
And best scholarly/academic work, we have Graphic Details, Jewish Women's Confessional Comics and Essays and Interviews, which I know is right at the top of your reading list.
Oh, of course.
Last week. And best publication design was Little Nemo, Dream Another Dream. So there you go. 99% of the stuff on this list is stuff that the average comic book reader has never read, never heard of, never seen,
mm-hmm.
and is probably not carried in his local store.
Love it.
So, again, it's a round of awards that everybody talks about, and no one really knows who wins or why or what this stuff is.
What can you do? But you know what? It's nice to be recognized.
I guess.
You know, it's nice to be recognized, so I think that's why, you know, it's still a big deal.
Let's see. Okay, moving on. DC actually officially announced the return of Milestone, calling it Earth M as part of their multiverse.
Right.
So now it's official. It's canon. They are back. Earth M. It has returned. I'm going to skip ahead through some of these. You somehow deleted all the text from this story.
Yes, I did.
You do.
I did. I completely just went, you know, nutso on that.
Star Wars insane. And Darth Vader crossover and Vader down.
There you go. I put it back in. There it is.
In a giant box that's hard to read, but there it is nonetheless.
Hey, it's legible, damn it.
I just copied it to all instead of making it bigger. Anyway, we've been talking a lot when we review the Star Wars books about how they seem to be intertwining the stories somewhat and they're referencing the books. And we even had Star Wars and Darth Vader with like the same ending last issue.
Right, yeah, they came to a mutual ending point, yeah.
Right, so now that they've announced that Vader down is where you're actually going to get the two books coming together and doing the flip-flop back-and-forth crossover event.
Nice that they actually, you know, they led themselves into that. They didn't start off with that. You know, it got the books off on, you know, good footing before they decided to do any sort of crossing over.
Sure. Yeah, I guess I can see that. You'd want to get that before you push anything else around. Let's see. Archie Meets the Ramones has been announced.
Okay.
Because remember Archie had a band? The Archies?
Yes, of course.
So the Archies and the Ramones are going to, I guess, appear together in an event. because, you know, Archie, still being relevant.
That's right.
Jonathan Hickman has announced that his next comic he will draw as well as write, which he did when he first became known with, was it Nightly News? Was his first big series that he wrote and drew, but we don't know exactly what the book is or who it's for or whatever, but he's just said that he's going back to doing that. Marvel's Blade is going to be returning.
Yes. Yes, they made this announcement. Apparently, it is a father-daughter... spoiler alert. Ding, 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 ding. It's a father-daughter story, interestingly enough.
Sure.
Right.
Unbeatable Squirrel Girl is going to survive into the all-new, all-different Marvel universe.
How is that selling in your store, Dirt?
It is not.
It is.
we order. It's one of those books where we order maybe four copies for the shelf just so that we carry it, you know? Right. And one or two might sell within the first week or so it comes out, and the rest just sit on the shelf for months and months
and months.
Until someone will come along every once in a while and buy like three or four in a row. But for the most part, the book does not sell. It just sits there. We don't have any subscribers.
Right, no pull list.
Nobody grabs it.
Gotcha.
DC has announced a new Aquaman Earth 1, Batman 66, and Avengers crossover. Well, those are two different things. Hold on.
Right.
Aquaman Earth 1, like the Batman Earth 1 and Superman Earth 1 graphic novels, where they're standalone storylines. They've also announced that Batman 66 is going to be crossing over with the Avengers, but the old British TV show.
Yes, Steed and Mrs. Peel.
Not Iron Man and Captain
exactly.
America.
Exactly. That's the Avengers, which was the perpetrator of the worst fraud to every, like, 10 or 12-year-old that, like, saw the Avengers in their TV guide. And I'm taking this back, way back.
It's like PBS at, like, 10:30 on a Sunday night. You had to beg your parents to let you stay up late.
You're like, please, it's the Avengers! And then it was... British
not.
Folks. Exactly. Yeah.
It's like the guy who did the voice of the computer on Superforce and some chick from some other movie line. But, yeah. So those Avengers with Batman 66. All right. Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness are starting Spider-Man Deadpool, which they've announced is an ongoing series.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't see that lasting terribly long, but
that's
I guess we'll see.
You know, but you know what's funny is that they've introduced a reason for me to pick up the first issue, or at least one of the variant covers. We'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll get to that.
This one actually... is important to me because I do have a son that they are doing an all ages in continuity Spidey series is what it's being called.
Right. And I've read this compared to this idea of the series being compared to Untold Tales of Spider-Man, but hopefully it's a little bit more fun and not as kind of, you know, steeped in Marvel lore the way Kurt Busiek kind of made those Untold Tales of Spider-Man stories. Remember those?
Very vaguely.
Okay.
But this is Spider-Man during his teenage years when he's in high school. He's got the powers. He's clumsy. But it is in continuity, so everything that happens in the series counts as what's happening with the adult book. And they said every issue is a standalone.
Mm-hmm.
So if a kid comes in and picks up issue 7 off the newsstand, he will get a complete story he can understand, which is great. It's one of those things I think is missing from modern comics these days, is having those. I kind of see a fair amount of adults being interested in this series.
Sure.
Along with the kids. But
especially the ones who just want to relive that era of Spider-Man.
There's very many
Peter Parker fans who kind of just want to stay in that time, you know, in that time period.
And you don't feel that pressure, like you have to read every month, and you don't feel like you fell behind on a lot of books. Like these Transformers books, I'm trying to read Transformers books, I'm like 6 months behind. I've got a stack of them, you know, piling up just because so much stuff is in them, so much happens, and you can't skip ahead, you gotta catch up. So, anyway. Moving on, we have Frank Miller is doing the interior pages and the covers for Dark Knight, The Master Race, which I'm looking forward to. I still love his artwork. I know a lot of people don't. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but I love
it. No, I'm a fan. I've never liked that title. never liked the title.
Rania Telmeyer, who is one of the Eisner winners I announced for some book that none of us had read, is getting a new book called Ghosts. So hopefully this one will get in front of readers' eyes. Bloom County is coming back as a comic strip.
That's good news.
Is it?
Yeah, I remember reading Bloom County when I didn't understand it.
What's the other one he did? There was Bloom County, and then there was Opus?
Yes.
And I always liked Opus. I didn't really care for Bloom County as much, so I don't know. We'll see. We have a TMNT board game coming from IDW Games. We've got a What If Infinity miniseries coming to the Marvel Universe. Top Cow is doing a bunch of new titles, Kickstarter project, which is interesting that a company like Top Cow is going to be doing a Kickstarter, because you would think that they're the type of company that would have the money, have
right, the front, the exactly.
Right. But apparently they're going to be doing it anyway.
Well, it might be an experiment because they've seen how successful some of these Kickstarter projects can be. So obviously there was the backlash that that Archie got from having their crowdfunded project all of a sudden they got that backlash from partnering with Walmart.
Right, and also what was the other Kickstarter thing? Cyberforce. When they relaunched Cyberforce, they did it as a Kickstarter to give away the books for free.
Right.
And so they told everybody, hey, you're going to get these free comics because Kickstarter, but then they charged the retailers, they charged us...
For shipping.
For the shipping on them. So they weren't free for us, but we were supposed to give them away.
Right. I remember that. I definitely have copies of those. So I wanted to mention real quick, one of the cool things that I did see coming out of San Diego was Congressman John Lewis basically cosplaying as himself, marching across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Dressed in the garb, in the clothes, a trench coat and backpack that he was that he was sporting basically when he was protesting during the civil rights movement, and he was on his way to a signing for March book one and book two, and I thought that was phenomenal. That's a great way to draw attention to the ongoing civil rights movement in this country, and and to the important subject of his books. So. That was a phenomenal thing to see, online, to see pictures of him doing that.
And then the final bit of news here is that Dennis Cowan has announced on Twitter that DC Collectibles is going to be doing a Milestone line. So any of you who are interested in getting Milestone Collectibles, they will be coming.
Hey, y'all, this is Dan with Crown and Collars. Just taking a moment to remind you to catch our West African brothers over at the Chicken and Jollof Rice Show. Chicken and Jollof Rice. African realness meets American sensibilities right here on the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Hi, this is The Wordsmith. This episode is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as Jarvis is my co-pilot. Shout out to the Avengers, Age of Ultron. Or the Central City Running Club. Shout out to the Flash. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us. That's cspn.us. Then click on Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner, then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today.
CSPN and the WrestleCast present the Summer of Slams live tweet series. All summer long, premiering July 25th on Saturday night, we will be live tweeting a special summer pay-per-view from the past. Help us choose which pay-per-view we look at first. Whether it's SummerSlam from 89, SummerSlam 1997, 2002 SummerSlam, Bash at the Beach 1996, The Great American Bash, Hog Wild from WCW, or even ECW's Heat Wave 97. You can vote now by going to cspn.us or by going to the WrestleCast Tumblr page, which is wrestlecast.tumblr.com, to cast your vote. All votes will be tallied, and we will watch the first pay-per-view in Summer of Slams together and live-tweet it online under the hashtag Summer of Slams. July 25th, Saturday night, join us and cast your vote now at cspn.us or wrestlecast.tumblr.com.
All right, do you want to jump into anything in the variants? I'm sure you want to mention the hip-hop covers.
Yes, just very quickly, I wanted to mention that Marvel announced that they're going to have roughly 50 variant covers inspired by hip-hop album covers. And, there's been some feedback on the interwebs about this, but, at first blush, when I saw the covers that they were talking about, I noticed specifically that they homaged the cover to the seminal hip-hop album Paid in Full by Eric B. and Rakim on the cover of Spider-Man and Deadpool number 1. And I had I honestly did not have any plans to pick up a single issue of Spider-Man and Deadpool, but now I have to have that cover. Damn
you're
Marvel.
Gonna buy all 50.
What's that?
You're going to buy all 50, Dave.
Oh, maybe all 50. So ladies and gentlemen, as we have teased, as we have put up online, we have our special guest joining us. And just as we are winding up our coverage of San Diego Comic-Con 2015, we have a live body that was actually there at San Diego to tell us about some of his experiences at San Diego. Ladies and gentlemen, your friend and mine, Matt Wang 97. What's up, Matt?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on the show. I apologize. My camera seems to be not working on my laptop. I had a great time. I was there out there last week. I got there Thursday night and left Saturday morning, and love to tell you guys about it. What do you guys want to know? What do you guys want to hear?
Well, I mean, listen, a little bit of everything. You definitely had a couple of talking points that you had laid out. So, talk about some of the lines you had to stand on and what was really in demand.
So, as many of you may know, that the Hasbro line is one of the most coveted lines at San Diego. And I've been going to San Diego Comic-Con. I've been there 10 times in the last 11 years. And almost every time, I've been able to figure out a way to get on the Hasbro line. Typically, I usually have to get there around 4 or 5 a.m. Stand in line. And what happens is you stand in line till about 9, and then you go upstairs, and then they give you a ticket. And that ticket tells you what time that day you can show up at the Hasbro booth to line up again to get the exclusives.
Wow.
And look, everyone really wanted the Doctor Strange exclusive this year, and it sold out by the end of day Friday.
Oh, that three-pack of figures with Dormammu as the big...
Yeah, and you have the Eye of Agamotto, you had Magic, Clea...
transparent Doctor Strange on the astral form, yes.
And I think one big thing this year that was very different was Lego, because of their new Marvel exclusive minifigs, had a similar system where you had to go line up in the very early in the morning, typically around 5 a.m., 6 a.m., to get a pass to get into the Lego booth and to get a minifig. And
wow.
I mean, Roddy Cat asked me to try to pick him up the Sam Wilson one, but unfortunately I couldn't do it, and it costs, I think on eBay it's about $150 to $200 right now.
Wow.
But yeah, it's the exclusive merchandise was even harder to get this year. I was able to go get on the Marvel booth and pick up a bunch of the Scotty Young pins.
Right.
I waited about 30, 45 minutes for
wow.
that. They're beautiful pins. I picked them up for some guys at Diamond that wanted them, and picked up some for myself. And, they had a whole Ant-Man set up where you can, you got to wear the Ant-Man helmet, and they made a video of you shrinking into Ant-Man.
So nice.
They were able to do that online. I think the thing I noticed, I go to New York Comic Con as well with you, Agent 70, and
sure.
I think one of the things I noticed is that I actually felt like New York Comic Con the last 2 years was more crowded on the floor space, just walking around the booths.
I believe it. I believe it. Some of the numbers back that up, too, in terms of the overall attendance.
Yeah, I think San Diego Comic Con, there's a lot more focus on the panels, especially the movie panels, and the last couple of years I've noticed in the outlying area, kind of like in that gaslight, in the gas lamp district around there, they've added a lot more stuff to do, because a lot of companies can't get into San Diego, into the convention center. So like Assassin's Creed had an entire obstacle course, with swings, and you can actually get a shave, because I think Gillette was a sponsor or something like that. But they had, all the companies are doing a lot more stuff outside the convention center, because they know people can't get in.
No kidding. All right. So,
how many San Diegos have you been to?
10.
How does this one compare to the past years?
I think, the the focus on the merchandise, I think that was really big. Everyone was commenting. There were certain parties that people could get into if you knew someone in the industry. And, you know, there was a lot more freebies at those parties. One, you couldn't even get into the parties because I think everyone heard about them. And then two, a lot of people weren't giving away as much free stuff. I think I started going in 2004, and the amount of free swag I can get then compared to now has dropped dramatically.
I've noticed that just across the board. I've been to Wizard Worlds, and I've gone to C2E2 in Chicago, and it used to be you'd go to these places and people are just putting comics in your hand, you know, just throwing hats and shirts out to the crowd and giving away posters, and all that stuff has kind of disappeared. You know, you might get a mini Marvel Frisbee or a Watcher eyeball, and that's about all you're going to get from some of these places nowadays.
Yeah, most of the booths now are focused on experiences, right? Like, you put up a picture of the Wizard booth, right? And they're highlighting, you know, the World of Warcraft movie and showing the models. And, you know, a lot of the entertainment booths are going in to watch videos. Or, you know, Warner Brothers had the Game of Thrones cast, so I got to see a bunch of them. But, you know, they mobbed that area immediately when people realized they were there. So I think people are just going more for the companies are bringing experiences there and trying to sell merchandise rather than going out there like giving away free posters or giving away free stuff. I remember I think when the Clone Wars season 2 the cartoon was out, everyone got a Stormtrooper helmet in the place.
Gotcha.
Well, one of the other things I've noticed the last few years with cons is that the amount of vendors, you know, guys with booths selling comics, selling toys, really has kind of dropped off, and it's become much more of, you know, the bigger companies having their booths set up. You know, Marvel has a big booth where they have creators go and sign stuff, and you'll have some energy drink handing out free samples, and you'll have some company you've never heard of that does online cybersecurity wanting you to sign up, and College of Design will be there to get you to sign up to take classes on how to draw and paint, whatever. But the amount of vendors that I've seen at a lot of shows has really dropped off over the last few years. Have you noticed that at San Diego? Are there a lot less guys selling back issues of comics and the classic stuff that used to be the, you know, meat and potatoes of these conventions?
You know, it shifted more toward like a higher end, kind of a higher end vendor. So if you're there to buy a high end 9.0, you know, classic Marvel or DC comic,
CGC,
CGC rated, like that's it's the place to go. Heritage Auctions was there. They're one of the premier auction vendors for comic book original art and high graded comics. And they had a major presence. There were about two or three other auction houses there. I mean, they were displaying Frank Miller Daredevil pages. Classic. I think old Miracle Man pages. Jack Kirby original art. And they were showcasing their auctions. I think, you know, even, you know, the Mile High Comics, who's been at San Diego Comic Con for, you know, 30 years, this year they, to help get people in their booths, they had that Star Wars exclusive cover. I'm not going to go there to find my fill in my gaps in my Suicide Run, Suicide Squad. I'm going out there to get the really hard comic that I can't find or that exclusive figure that no one else has.
Right.
But yes, I've definitely seen a shrinkage in the number of kind of like medium to lower end vendors. Yeah, you can go, like, if I wanted my $40 Hulk figure, the Marvel Masterpieces, I can still get that there. It's just they're a lot less.
All right. One thing I mentioned earlier in the show, Matt, there's an article on Grantland today from Van Jensen, the writer, who was the new incoming writer on Flash. He's been working DC for a while now on various titles, and he has an interesting write-up that was published today about trends at San Diego Comic Con. So I think you should read that and take a look and see what his take is from a industry professional's perspective.
Right. I mean, obviously he's giving Barry Allen lightning powers, right?
That's the TV show, two, I think.
I know. I'm just playing. I mean, San Diego Comic Con's always been, in the last 10 years, always been about the TV shows and the movies. Like,
right.
They're for that. I mean, New York Comic Con, the Wizard World, you know, a lot more publisher focused. You know, I mean, it's so close. You know, I'm being a dead horse to the here. I mean, you know, it's so close to LA. You know, you're going to get all the, you get all these agents, all these managers are floating around. You know, someone works in the business. It's, you know, San Diego becomes a little Hollywood in some ways. But I think one of the fun things about the show is like you're literally just walking around. Like I think it was like two years ago, we were eating dinner at just a regular Mexican restaurant or Italian restaurant down the block. And Peter Jackson just, like, walks in. And, like, none of us recognized him. And someone elbows me and goes, you know, that's Peter Jackson from Lord of the Rings. I was like, oh, really? That's him? And, like, he's able to just walk in the restaurant, chatting with some people, and, like, basically no one recognized him. And I think that's one of the charms about San Diego Comic-Con. You know, like, the area is so small. Like, you're just going to – you literally will walk into someone. Like, I was at the Zenoscope party on Thursday night, and I ended up talking to someone. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm from the East Coast, too. And we started chatting. And 15 minutes in, I realized it was a Dante from Clerks, the actor. He was so nice. He was super nice, and we're just chatting away, and we're just chatting about the lack of good pizza and bagels in L.A.
That's funny.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've heard you guys talk about it before. I know you guys have had opportunities to go out to San Diego. And, look, I recommend it for any fan to go out once, and I talk to people about it. I mean, Airbnb it, it's actually very reasonable. I think the hardest thing is getting tickets, getting passes, getting in. You know, I was talking to some. One of the things they have great gaming areas. So I spent a couple hours in the gaming areas, and there's about eight gamers who basically got a place a week before Comic-Con, literally right across the street. You know, three bathrooms, a lot of bedrooms, and they they're paying kind of less than $100 per person per night.
Wow.
So you know, I think there are a lot of deals like that out there.
Interesting. So when you say gamer, you know, just very quickly, when you say gamers, are you talking about video gamers or just you know, the overall, you know, experience that they have at these cons now where they have board games and they have role-playing games and tabletop games all in like one, you know, when they're advertising them all in one area? Did they have a significant showing for that at San Diego, or is that just kind of on the smaller side?
Microsoft and Xbox sponsored an area in the Hyatt, which is about at the one end of the con is the Marriott, and then right next to it is the Hyatt. And the Hyatt's famous because that's where a lot of comic book writers would go drink in the evening. And in that hotel, the Xbox had one floor where they were showcasing a lot of their games, and you got to play a lot of them. That's where I think that's where the new Transformers game is being showcased. And then, like, you know, one floor, Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast had, like, D&D and Magic the Gathering. So I checked out that hotel and checked out that whole experience. It's free. You just walk in. You don't have to pay. You don't need a pass to get in.
Sure.
Packed with people. You know, you still feel like you're part of the con.
Nice.
Like, Nintendo has done it before. Like, there's literally, like, a whole Pokemon room in the past. You know, and, I definitely recommend it for anyone going.
Cool. All right. And last but not least, I know that you dropped off you left us a quick note about a lost invite to a party. Just tell us real quick about that.
So I had kind of a marathon weekend, and like every evening, there's always like one or two really good parties to go to. So I got there Thursday evening. I'm good friends with the owners and founders of Zenoscope. So I got to go to their party. So a shout out to Ralph and Joe for getting me in. And they had a beautiful party on the rooftop of the Indigo Hotel, which kind of overlooked Petco, the
stadium.
They actually had themed drinks for their characters. So they had a Robin Hood themed drink and a Van Helsing themed drink.
Okay.
And some of the Inferno themed drink. I drank a lot of Infernos that night, and that's where saw a lot of Z-list celebrities there. It was a lot of fun. Then obviously
go back to my hotel room.
Yeah, Z for Zenoscope. And then the next day, I go to this other party. An old classmate of mine, was throwing a fundraiser, which I didn't realize was a fundraiser when I got the invite to the party. So I was like, okay, I got a party to go to. But literally everyone else I knew, got invited to the Skybound party, which was the party I go to on Friday night. And, you know, it was going to be, you know, obviously the cast of The Walking Dead, and, you know, and a lot of these parties, yeah. You're just walking around, and you literally are, like, bumping into to the actresses and the actors, and then also, you know, drinking with them. I went to the Playboy Bates Motel party last year, and I was actually standing next to Ben McKenzie, Commissioner Gordon. I was eating a taco, he was having a drink, you know, and then, so I'm like, crap, I can't get a invite to this party, and, you know, so I don't even bother. So what I did was I just went, you know, I went out to this other party, stayed for about 30 minutes. It kind of wasn't my scene. They were trying to hit me up for money the entire time. All the food was vegan and paleo. Don't even ask.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and then I ended up, I had a flight the next day at 6 a.m., so I'm like, okay, I should probably get some rest. I get it, and I'm in my hotel room, midnight, I get a text, we got you into the Skybound party. I'm an idiot. I did not go.
Oh, man, you're killing me, man. You break my heart.
But, you know, I promise next year I'll make sure I'll take some pictures with some celebrities with you, for you.
Nice, nice. Excellent. And listen, if you know, God willing, I can make my way out there. We'll see. It's still a year away now, you know? But anyway,
you can
thanks.
You can crash on my floor.
Absolutely. Like you said, the hard part is getting a pass. That's the kicker. You have to get into the con. So.
Well, I will tell you this. I think San Diego Comic Con, if they're really good about getting people in the industry into the mm-hmm. con. Unlike, you know, I think Reed throws a great. Reed is the entity that throws the corporate entity that throws New York Comic Con.
Right.
Some larger, more corporate con.
Right.
Yeah, C2E2, and I, you know, for some reason, you know, I do a lot of work in the game space, and I can't get a pass, industry pass for those cons. But for San Diego, I can get a pass. And
if you want to go to C2E2, let me know, because I go every year. We always get passes comped for press, and we can always also get them as retailers. So if you ever want to go to a C2E2, let me know.
I definitely will. I love going to Chicago, so I that's one con I haven't been to yet. So
nice.
But every time I'm near Comic Con, I hang out with Agent 70. We actually spend we spend most of our time just shopping for baby clothes for our friends' kids.
absolutely. Especially on a Sunday when we're like rushing around, you know, trying to get the last minute deals.
Oh yeah, like when the hardcovers are 70% off and we're just going, you can give it to us for 80. Come on, 80%.
Yeah, you don't want to take this back with you. Come on. That's funny. All right, well, listen, Matt, thanks for coming on. Thanks for giving us the rundown of your time at San Diego Comic-Con 2015. You're more than welcome to stay on. I don't know if you read any of the books for this week, but you're
more than welcome to stay on. I read five books this week.
Okay.
I heard all your news, though, and I always want to hear Dirk's commentary on Star Trek comics, so I don't think there are any this week. So.
No.
Like I said, you're welcome to stay on if you want. It's up to you.
Yeah, I'll love to stay on and give you some of my pointed commentary.
Cool. All right. So we are now at the ad space. We have an ad read, and let me pull up the ad read. Hopefully I haven't closed it. Where is our ad read? I had it up, people. You know, da na 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 na. I love it. Where the hell did I put the ad read?
Oh my goodness!
I know. I'm killing myself here. This is awful.
You're not going to be paid in full.
Yeah, I know. I'm totally letting everybody down by totally screwing up this ad read. Like, where is the ad read? Unreal.
Go to audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles. Sign up for your
nice
free audiobook, or you can listen to one of the top bestsellers of over 180,000 titles. Just go to audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles. There, how's that?
Yes! Dirt! I think that's your first one! Nice! Good job, Dirt.
All right. We do have a question
to answer
from a reader, or listener, whatever. Reader, yeah.
viewer.
This is from Cyber Soldier, who says, "Hello, Click Nation, long-time listener. First time I'm chiming in with an email." I love openings like that. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
First-time caller, that's right.
Anyway, let's see here. It talks about Tim Dog, forget him. Anyway, I've recently picked back up Avengers Arena on the Marvel Universe app. I love the story. I know it's Hunger Games-based. I heard of it on the show, and it's kept my attention. Here's my question. Will Battleworld be built using that concept? I mean, not exactly Arcade's world, but has Marvel figured out that versus issues and epic battle issues get people going? I know you've probably mentioned it on the show, but indulge me. Where's Battleworld going? Thanks for your time.
All
so,
right.
Where's Battleworld going? Are we going to get a lot more versus? What do you think?
Well, we do have that, you know, we have that, what is it, the Battleworld Journal? Am I getting the title wrong?
No, it's Battleworld Journal, yeah.
So, you know, we do have that. That's sort of like a versus type thing. But I think, you know, the crux of the Secret War story, just to fill Cyber Soldier in, is the bottom line is this is the reality as Dr. Doom with the Beyonder's power has seen fit to create, that he was able to kind of salvage as reality was imploding on itself. So that's where we are here, and that's the reality that the Marvel that the heroes and the villains are all facing now. So, you know, it's not necessarily you know, it's a far different concept than what Avengers Arena is, but ultimately that's what we're getting in these pockets. We're getting, oftentimes we're getting, you know, fights for survival between regions on this patchwork battle world. So, right. You know, some of these titles go, you know, basically detail one area's fight against the other for survival.
Well, I was just going to say, most of the books, you know, you've got the Thors there to stop people from traveling in between the different areas.
Right.
And the one spot where we really have it open is the Age of Ultron Marvel Zombies, because no one wants to mess with them anyway, so they just let them kind of run wild on the bottom of the planet.
Right. We also have the Squadron Supreme one as well.
Right.
But for the most part, it seems like they're really trying to keep them all separate, because the overall idea of Battleworld is more along the lines of, let's revisit these characters and these storylines and these concepts and let them play out in their own separate little universe without a lot of interaction. And your main story is the Secret War story, where they're trying to unravel this world and somehow recreate reality the way it's supposed to be and get rid of Doom World. I don't know that we're going to see a lot more crossovers. I don't really know that we're going to have a month where all the walls come down and everybody just, you know, runs from...
Well, you know what's funny about that? I may have let my experience reading Siege color my recap of Battleworld.
See, I haven't read Siege.
Right. Siege number one that's out this week may have just recolored my perspective on what on how Secret Wars is going to play out. So I apologize for maybe jumping the gun on that.
Siege number one was a great book this week.
Well, I tell you what, since we're on that note, why don't we go ahead and jump into some of these comic reviews.
Right. And of course, I didn't type Siege number one into my list.
I didn't read it anyway, but
yeah.
But if you read it, go ahead. Why don't we start with Siege number one?
All right. So Siege number one is basically a story of the Shield, right? And the Shield in Doom's battle world is the group that's tasked with maintaining the wall that separates the Deadlands and some of the more fractious regions to the south. From, you know, places where Doom's rule is, you know, basically being followed. And so the Shield is led by Agent Abigail Brand, formerly of S.W.O.R.D., and has a lot of characters plucked from the various iterations of S.H.I.E.L.D., such as Leonardo da Vinci from the Hickman and Dustin Weaver S.H.I.E.L.D., and... you know, there's a lot of cool scenes in the book detailing what it means to be exiled to the Shield. We see characters from earlier Secret Wars limited series who were exiled to the Shield. We see them reappear in this first issue, and we see what it means to be exiled to the Shield. I enjoyed this. This was a great, you know, this was a surprise. To me, I was very much pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed this book, and I find myself saying that a lot with some of these Secret Wars limited series. What did you think about it, Matt?
I totally agree with you. I think this was one of the books I was really anticipating. The cast of characters. I'm a big fan of kind of more obscure characters and people that are leftover characters from other books, or I hate to say leftover, but they kind of are. And you know, these are characters you don't get that don't get the spotlight a lot, and which means the writer and the creative team can do a lot more with them.
Right.
And you know, I think one of the things I really liked about the book, and no spoilers, it answers a question I think a lot of people have had on Secret Wars since the beginning. And it answers one of the mysteries. But, you know, and I think the only question I had, though, on the – my only – you know, I call my put my continuity hat on was, you know, the only thing my question was that, you know, Abigail Brand's history spans back 30 years. You know, so I know in Secret Wars they talk about Secret Wars number 3. I think they said they've been on the world for 8, but you know, I guess that's part of everyone feels like they've lived their whole life here. So
right. So you know, like I said, very surprising. You know, I definitely made some hard choices when it came down to what books I would actually pull for Secret Wars. You know, what I would buy in a physical copy.
Right.
And I didn't read this in time to buy this when I went to visit the comic shop on Wednesday, but I intend to pick this up because I liked it that much.
All right, I'll have to read it over the weekend then.
Very interesting.
What the fuss is all about. All right, did you read anything else that was Battle World or Secret Wars this week?
Yeah, I read Inhumans Attilan Rising number 3.
Okay.
This is something I recommend, especially if you've been reading Inhumans. That's written by Charles Soule. And what I love about this book is that it's, you know, the characters, while they're obviously not necessarily how we would remember them from pre-Secret Wars Marvel continuity, they still sort of act true to form, you know, except their allegiances have been changed, you know, to fit the telling of the story. It's still a great read. The highlight of this book for me is the confrontation between Black Bolt and Medusa. It reads so well. It's you know, it's very well done. It's a tough read to pick up if this is your first issue of this series. I don't think it's, you know, the most friendly to a new reader. But if you have time to go back and check out the first two, I recommend it because this is just a continuation of a good story. And the highlight is the interaction between Black Bolt and Medusa. It's sort of a tease because it's what we've been looking for, you know, kind of a knockdown dragout. We had something akin to this, you know, a small confrontation towards the end of the Inhuman series, but this is something that we sort of expected to see in the Inhuman series proper, and we got it here in Attilan Rising. So, you know, that part was the highlight for me.
Did you happen to read Battle World number 3?
No, I did not. Although I did flip through it. I saw the kind of cool Wolverine art, you know, the various Wolverine variations in the first couple of pages.
Well, there's two main stories. There's a Wolverine story in the front and the Deadpool backup story. And I have to say, the Wolverine story did pretty much nothing, but the Deadpool story was actually a lot of fun.
Hmm.
It was actually, it's worth picking up the book, just skip halfway through and just read that Deadpool story. And there's even an Ant-Man 1 page at the end of the book that's worth taking a look at as well.
That was confusingly colored. I did see that. You know what I mean, right, there?
Yeah.
Right at the end. Although I did Lockjaw in that the Deadpool story.
Yes. Yeah. Oh. Well, Lockjaw is Deadpool's steed in this part of Battle Room.
I love it. And so, I wanted to stop and read it. I was flipping through it. I just wanted to take a quick peek at it, and I noticed that. So I'll on your recommendation, I'm going to go back and read that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily worth picking up the whole book if you're looking for something to buy, you know, just to read that one backup story. But if you can find a newsstand that doesn't mind if you sit there for about 5 minutes and flip through it, go ahead and read the back part of that book.
Well, we do have our academic copies, so yes, our academic review copies, so we're all right.
Anything else, Secret Wars or Battle World that you
Secret Wars, Battle World. I'll do a quick run through. Years of Future Past, very surprised at how much I'm enjoying this. There is a twist that is literally straight out of Star Wars in this, and I'll leave it to you guys to figure out and to the listeners and viewers to figure out what I mean by that. But the bottom line is this story follows a region of Battleworld that has taken the events, the basic story of Years of Future Past, Days of Future Past, and elongated and created, you know, what would happen down the road with the children of some of the X-Men. And we find out that some of these children don't realize how they might be connected, and there is your Star Wars reference.
Okay.
So, again, this is another book that has been a pleasant surprise. I have definitely stopped reading some of the Battle World, some of the Secret Wars related books, because they just haven't, you know, they haven't really gone anywhere in two or even three issues. The ones that I can definitely recommend are Inhumans, Attilan Rising, and you know, if you're an X-Men fan, especially Years of Future Past. Those are amongst the Secret Wars limited series that I would recommend, because they just tell, you know, they're telling good stories on their own.
The Art Adams covers have been gorgeous too. I mean, they remind me of what was it, Uncanny X-Men Annual number 10, right, with Captain Ahab.
Yes.
I can't get my number right, but it totally reminds me of that, and I'm glad they got him for the covers. He was like the perfect guy to do these.
Oh, I think people will buy it just for the covers. You know, just for the Art Adams covers. Let's see. And did anyone read Guardians of Nowhere?
I'm looking. It's right on my desk, right on my table right now. I haven't cracked it yet.
I won't spoil too much, but I think I've said this on previous shows. Sometimes you can tell by the creative team whether or not the events or the stories that are being told in these Secret Wars books may have some impact down the road. This is a Bendis book. And Mike Diodato is doing the art on this. So there is a very good chance, at least in my opinion, that some of the events in this book are going to play into the future of the Marvel Universe.
I'm really curious. Well, I'm, just to interrupt you quickly, I'm curious because so far everything we've seen of Battleworld has been Earth-centric.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Guardians of the Galaxy and the reference to Nowhere tells you that it's deep space.
It's not deep space. It's the moon orbiting Battle World.
Okay. All right.
Nowhere, the space station. I'm glad that you brought that up, because that was going to be the next, you know, kind of my intro to the story, which is the one moon that God Doom. I hate to, you know, it sounds so weird, but you read it so much, you know, that's the way you need to describe it. That Doom, as the Beyonder, as the creator of this Battle World, the one moon that he saw fit to kind of incorporate was the space station Nowhere. And that is the moon that orbits Battleworld.
All right, then. I may actually read this one. This is one that I have sitting here to read. I just had to choose between it and Hawkeye, and so I went with
right.
Hawkeye.
The story was, you know, the story was okay. The ending, you know, I was pretty unenthusiastic about where the story ended up as a first issue. But as I said earlier, because Bendis is writing this, and because Diodato has been picked to do the pencil art on this, you have to believe that this is going to have ramifications in all new, all different going forward.
Right.
So, I would say that this is much closer to required reading of the Secret Wars limited series.
Is it better or worse than Dark Avengers? Because I loved Bendis and Diodato's Dark Avengers.
In terms of the art, I mean, it's less muddied than a lot of the Dark Avengers was, you know, if you're just looking at the art. But, you know, honestly, it was the first issue. There's not much happening in the first, you know, after the first page of exposition, we have a couple of knockdown, drag-out fight scenes between Angela and Drax the Destroyer. It takes up a lot of the book. So, and then, as I said, we get to a point at the end of the story where, you know, there's a character reveal that didn't have very much of an effect on me. So it kind of landed flat. It was kind of, you know, ultimate, like, as I said, you know, it's not the best book. I don't know if I would compare this to any of the Dark Avengers stuff that you were referring to. But I think it's required reading because it's going to mean something later on. You know what I enjoyed, though, was Captain Britain and the Mighty Defenders number one. You know, Al Ewing and Alan Davis. That was actually another surprising read. You know, it was a lot of fun seeing what's a common thread in a lot of the Battle World, the Secret Wars books that I've read, where people start to doubt. You know, the characters are starting to doubt their place in Battle World, and they realize that something is very, very much amiss. And you know, they kind of stop trusting the word of Doom as God. And you know, one character specifically in this book, you know, loses a particular station or power because of, you know, heresy, you know, heretical statements that the character makes, and Doom notices. So, you know,
I love the team too. The team on this book, the ragtag team of superheroes in this book was great.
Yes. Did you read this?
Yeah.
You did read it. Wasn't it interesting to see how an alternate Iron Man? I'll leave it at that. An alternate character becoming Iron Man, you know, sort of made sense, and how it sort of, you know, the progression from that event to where we come, you know, to sort of how that character evolved as the Iron Man character just sort of made sense after a while. You know, like I just a couple pages in.
I was shocked that no one had ever done it before.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Dirt, I would recommend that you read this just because it's fun.
I tried, but the thing is, I've always liked Captain Britain, and so I was like, oh, Captain Britain. So then I open it up, and it's not Brian Braddock, and I was like, oh.
Well, he makes an appearance.
Yeah, well, she, like, mentions that he's dead or whatever, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Come on. Hobie Brown is Spider-Man?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I'll ring the spoiler bell on that one just in case people, you know, won't appreciate the fact that we just spoiled that, but that was pretty cool.
Oh, no, it's in the solicits. It's okay.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Now, one that I did read that is kind of along the same themes that sounds like what you're talking about is I did read Captain Marvel and the Carol Corps 2.
Yes.
And this is following along that same line where one of the characters was speaking to a Thor last issue, and the Thor was talking about how Doom took one of the stars from the sky and made it into their hammer or whatever, and they're going, stars in the sky? There are no stars in the sky. What are you talking about? So they're starting to realize that Doom is lying to them, that this world in which they live is a false reality. And so they're trying to figure out some way to prove that Doom is wrong, that Doom is lying. And they happen to find a warship that they're supposed to attack last issue. Mm-hmm. One person survives, and so they bring that one person back, and it's a version of Rhodey, right. James Rhodes, from another alternate world within Battleworld. And his story is completely different from their story. And so, again, the whole myth of Doom and Battleworld is unraveling. And I like seeing how this carefully crafted lie that Doom is running is coming unraveled within these worlds. And, you know, you've got to feel that, again, talking about with the Bendis book, that this is one of those books that will lead to whatever culmination that is the end of Battleworld. When it all falls apart, some of the seed has got to come from this, I would think, because of the questions are being brought up, the way people are losing their faith in Doom. And even some of the characters that they bring in, who the moment they arrive into the story, they are people who, well, I've got to tell Doom about this. This is heresy. You're not allowed to say these things. You can't think these things. But then they turn to him and say, well, you're thinking the exact same thing too, aren't you? And then it's kind of it reminds me of a documentary I saw about North Korea, where someone went to North Korea, and it's like you can't tell who in North Korea actually believes all this stuff about the glorious leader and who is just going along with it, because the moment you mention that you doubt it, they're going to turn you in and you'll get killed.
Right.
You know, so it's like who actually believes this stuff and who is just going along with it because they know they have no other choice. And that's the same type of thing that's happening here in the Carol Corps, is that it's unraveling. They don't believe it, but you can't just say that. There's no, First Amendment rights. You have no right of assembly. You can't just stand up and say, well, Doom's a liar, because if you do, then you're dead, you know. You're going to get thrown over the shield. So I've enjoyed this story and watching how this stuff is unraveling. And again, I say it just feels like it's got to somehow play into that end of Battleworld that's coming.
Sure, absolutely. I was going to mention yet another Secret Wars book that has followed that that line of storytelling, you know, where characters are investigating and digging deeper into their reality and trying to find out why things are happening and why things are the way they are, and that's the Korvac saga. Of all books, you would think that the cosmic power, you know, some of the characters that are cosmically powered would be more in tune with detecting that something was amiss, and that is definitely the case here, where Starhawk is discovers that that something is amiss with reality itself. And so I hear an echo.
Yeah, I'm hearing the echo of Dave coming.
I can hear myself. But the bottom line is, this is another story. I'm not a fan of the change in art on the Korvac Saga book. It was Gerardo Sandoval, and it switched to Otto Schmidt. And it still his style still evokes that kind of animated style of art that Gerardo Sandoval has, kind of anime inspired. Or manga inspired, but it's a bit of a step down from Gerardo Sandoval. But overall, the story is still, it's still well done, and it makes sense that some of these cosmically powered or cosmic level powered characters would be very much aware that something was wrong. And, you know, when they start to look into it, you know, Doom kind of pushes back. And that is where we leave off. So, again, that's another Secret Wars book that's following that line. And I guess we're, you know, we're what, halfway through Secret Wars now?
Well, I mean, the way it keeps getting delayed, who knows, technically.
Right, but in terms of the stories that have been, you know, that have been 3 issues in or 2 issues in, we're starting to get to that point where we see where some of these stories might be leading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think October, they're releasing the trade paperbacks of a lot of these in October mm-hmm. or November. October, actually, and a lot of them are only 4 issues.
Right. So if you're 2 or even 3 issues in already, then it's not hard to say that you know, we're getting to you know, the main conflict in the book and seeing how it's going to be resolved.
I do gotta say, I do have a bone to pick with the Korvac Saga book. I mean, really, you call the kingdom the Enchanted Wood, and the other kingdom Forest Hills?
No, Hollywood.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, because it's Hollywood, and yeah.
It's sort of like, I'll do a spoiler from the 1990s Guardians of the Galaxy series. So, you know, remember that series, the Jim Valentino series, when they go back to Earth finally?
Yeah.
And they discover that one of the superheroes there called Hollywood was actually Wonder Man. Which is like 1,000 years
that's ago. That must be a callback to this. That's a callback, you know, that particular name. Because I just thought it was because, you know, Wonder Man was... Because I didn't read that particular run of Guardians, but... you know, knowing that now, that's definitely a callback to that series.
It is, not to digress from the reviews, but I think you definitely need to sit down and read that run. I mean, okay. the first story arc, the search for Captain America's shield, mm-hmm. And like Jim Valentino really thought about what the future of the Marvel Universe would look like and tried to really tie it to mm-hmm. Tie the cosmic world and that future Marvel Universe with kind of what we know. And it was a lot of fun, and it was, you know, and Jim Valentino wrote and drew everything. It was great.
Awesome. Well, I think we covered most of the Secret Wars books that we want to talk about. I think there's one Marvel book, though.
Yeah, one Marvel book that was not a Secret Wars tie-in.
Oh, let me deal with the last Secret Wars tie-in. You just flipped past it. You made me remember. Sorry.
Hydra?
Silver Surfer. So, speaking of books that may very well lead into what we know, you know, into the resolution of Secret Wars and how we're, what's going to be affected, you know, what we're going to see in All New, All Different. It's funny to see that even this Silver Surfer series, which has kind of been off on its own, you know, with this tie-in, basically brings everything together and brings the Surfer and Dawn Greenwood right into the story of Secret Wars. And listen, I'm probably the only fan of this series on the podcast, but I liked this series as a whole. I liked, you know, the character development that they granted to Norrin Rad and the Silver Surfer, and to Toomey the board, the surfboard. You know, to see it come to this where they run into the implosion of reality, and you know, they're basically saved from it, but then encounter the new reality that is Doom, and that's where we leave off. So this is, you know, I guess a two part or even 3 part story. I'm not sure when the book is going to end. This is issue 13. I don't know if they're going to 14 or 15, but it's kind of cool that you know, they brought the Surfer in almost at a logical point. You know, it wasn't just sprung on him. It actually just sort of happened in the progression of his story. So I like that part. And I know no one else is going to have anything to say about this, so we should jump right into the book that Dirt and I were teasing just before I remembered I wanted to talk about Silver Surfer. And that book is...
the book you've been waiting for since 2013, I think.
Yeah, or at least early parts of 2014.
How delayed has this issue been?
No idea.
Captain America White delayed.
Nice.
But here it was... the end of Hawkeye, the end of an era, the end of this quirky little fun offshoot series in its own little section of the Marvel Universe. Oversized issue, $4.99, and this wrapped up the tracksuit mafia.
Mafia.
And your mime. Who's the mime assassin? I forget what his name was.
Clown.
I forgot so clown. Much about this.
It's been so long.
I forgot so much about this. It's been... Listen, I forgot that pizza dog's name is actually Lucky, you know. And what's funny is
wasn't the editor the assistant editor on this book before 3 years ago or whatever?
Sana Amana? I think so, yeah. I think so. Well, wasn't Jeff Wacker the previous editor? Or Steve Wacker?
Oh, yeah, Steve Wacker produces all the cartoons now. That was, like, so long ago.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, I love that the opening page for this issue was, the recap page was, if you're still here, you know what happened last time. That was pretty funny. So, I'm going to be calling people bro for a little while after reading this. Every time I pick this up, because what I love about this book is that it has a rereadability. Mm-hmm. I've reread this a couple of times, just kind of skimmed it, the second time through. But I love the fact that they're just small little things that are worth catching in Aja's art, the second time around.
Well, yeah, and there's even a scene that sticks out in my mind towards the end of the book where Clint looks like he's about to be killed,
mm-hmm.
and it almost looks like he's giving into it.
Yes.
Like for a moment, you believe that he's actually given up, and he's like, yeah, okay, go ahead, shoot me in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the other Hawkeye Kate, jumps in,
mm-hmm.
In order to save the day. Things go wrong, and then you see Hawkeye, what his plan had been from the beginning. But it's one of those things where you go back, like, 3 pages later, you see what he was actually planning to do, and then you go back to the original spot where it looked like he had given up, and you realize that's what he was going to do all along. And the artwork is so great because there's so many subtle things that you might not catch as you're originally reading it, but then you can kind of go back now that you know what the end is and say, okay, well, that's where that got set up.
Right.
He did grab that off the table that he ended up using later.
Right.
All of that kind of stuff that goes along.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. Like I said, it has that rereadability because of not just the art, but the story also. Just kind of seeing things get tied up and wrapped up, and how we get from what I could remember being kind of a really dire, desperate situation with Hawkeye's Clint Barton's brother Barney, the erstwhile. Swordsman, or I forget what his villainous alter ego was. Trickshot, thank you. Trickshot. So yeah, I thought he was dead, and spoiler alert.
He's not.
I thought that was pretty funny. I was like, really? I thought he was dead, but he was, he's obviously not. So
there were some good nods, some good, tie-ups for the series. Good to see the Neighborhood Watch come together there, mm-hmm. towards the end. And just, it was a satisfying conclusion. It really feels like a bookend for the series. I'm sad to see it go.
Yes.
It's been a delightful, but it is one of those things, it is self-contained enough that in 2 years you could sit down and read it again and it's not going to matter.
Absolutely.
Everything will still play out fine. You're not going to have to worry about finding crossover issues for some, big, there's no Secret Wars tie-in, there's no Secret Invasion tie-in, nothing like that to bog it down. So it's a really good bookshelf series to buy the trades, buy the hardcovers, throw them on your shelf, and go revisit them from time to time.
Agreed. And it's something that you can recommend to someone as a contained story.
Yeah. What should I read? I haven't really been into comics for a while.
So exactly.
There you go. That's one of those.
That's it. And weren't you sad when they made it look like Pizza Dog got? I was sad.
Sad. I thought you said glad.
Sad. Yes. Weren't you sad just for a minute, because they really made you think that he definitely had made the final heroic sacrifice,
And that's one of those things where you're reading it and you actually kind of like, for a moment, like, oh my gosh, are they? No, don't do that.
Yes.
But it's the last issue. You never know.
Exactly. So listen, this is a clear click of the week candidate for me, and we haven't even touched any of the DC stuff. So, that's my view on this. Matt, did you read this?
I just thought it was a little rushed. That was it.
Really?
It felt a little rushed.
It's 2 years late, but it felt a little rushed.
Well, I know the irony in my statement. It just felt like that fraction. I loved it, and I can see why it's a click of the week candidate. It just felt like, when I was reading it, I just felt like he was making a couple jumps really quickly, and look, I love this run, and I think it's a great ending, and when Kate Bishop said, stop fighting it, to Lucky, I was like, bald. So.
Yeah, it's like, don't stop fighting. Yep.
But look, this team, Matt Fraction and David Aja, right? They're the team from the Immortal Iron Fist, right?
Yes. Oh, no,
like,
no.
I'll read anything. But...
Yeah, I was about to say it started with Brubaker and Fraction, but yeah, it was mostly Fraction.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I'll follow these guys anywhere now after those two runs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. I'm on board.
This was the first book I read this week. Just because we have waited almost three years for this thing.
Yeah. makes perfect sense, man. It makes perfect sense. All right. Who's got a book they want to talk about?
You want to hop over to their distinguished competition?
Yeah, or we could talk about an IDW or an Image book if you want.
What, do you have an IDW or Image book?
I do.
Oh, go for it.
I have an IDW book that I enjoyed reading, and it had very little reading in it. It was Godzilla in Hell.
Nah.
I did read that as well.
Godzilla in Hell, number one. This is by this book is done by the writer and artist of what I think is the best Godzilla limited series that's been done to date. That's Godzilla: The Half Century War. Namely, the artist I'm speaking about is James Stocco. This book is basically like an acid trip, and you know, there's very little text in the book. It's a lot of absorbing the imagery of Godzilla literally plummeting into the depths of hell, and what Godzilla is experiencing. And what Stocco really does in this issue is he gives Godzilla's face a level of emotion that you don't think would be, you know, right, that you don't think Godzilla's capable of.
Yeah.
And that's how you sort of read into what's going on and what Godzilla's feeling. So I think that's the strength in the art in this book. I'm not 100% sure where this is going from here, because where it ends is kind of out there. Did you have a chance to read this, Dirt?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, just to sort of stare at and absorb the art, right?
There's a lot going on in this book that's on a different level.
Yes.
Because you do have to realize that what the title of this book is legitimately, this is Godzilla in an afterlife. This is him seeing a kaleidoscope of his memories and his past experiences coming back to haunt him.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's even a scene where he sees off in the distance this nuclear power plant, and you just see he gets that look on his face that, you know, it's like the dog chasing after the neighborhood cat, you know? It's like, I gotta go stop that thing. And of course he goes towards it, and it leads to some other acid trip moment. But you really have to just absorb it, because like, yeah, you said, there's the only words are right at the beginning where he sees the abandon all hope, ye who enter here sign,
right,
that appears before him. But otherwise, it's the only words are like sound effects of the crush and the rumble and the crackle and whatever. So it is, you know, your eyes are just pulling everything in and making sense of these images that you're looking at. And it really struck me about how creative you have to be to put together a story like this, where you're, what would death, what would the afterlife, what would, you know, how would this look for this giant monster? And I think this is the perfect job of putting that type of thing together.
Definitely, definitely. I enjoyed this. It couldn't quite reach Click of the Week territory for me, but I definitely enjoyed the art. If anyone is a fan of Stocco's rendition of Godzilla, you have to pick this up.
I agree. For once.
Here's a quick sample of what you'll hear on this week's edition of CSPN Presents Know the Score.
As a black NASCAR fan, there is a certain perception about the sport and the people who watch it and the region that it appeals to.
You know what? It's from black folk and white folk alike. When I tell them I'm a NASCAR fan, or if I've got on like a Dale Jr. hat or whatever, they look at me like I have five heads, like they don't expect it. They seem to care more about the fact that I was a junior fan versus a Gordon fan or a Jimmy Johnson fan than, you know, what my skin color was. Now, after the race, things go back to normal.
I've not had a bad experience myself. If I've ever been chided or anything like that, it's because of the people I'm rooting for. One race, we're sitting on the back stretch in Daytona, and the people right above us were Rusty Wallace fans. So, and the fact that I was a PEI fan. So there was just that back and forth, and it was friendly. It was friendly the whole time.
You can find new episodes of CSPN Presents Know the Score on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, TuneIn, or wherever fine podcasts can be found. Look for Cold Slither Podcast Network to subscribe, or check out our website at cspn.us. New episodes every Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern. Check us out. CSPN Presents Know the Score.
Going through a tough situation in life? Looking for a different method?
maybe try some bad advice. The Bad Advice Show by Baker Bone and Sarome. New episodes on Wednesdays. Listen in on the Cold Slither Podcast Network. I am Dan with Crown and Collards, and I approve this message.
I started a joke, which started the whole world crying. That I didn't see that the joke was on me.
So, moving over to the distinguished competition then.
Okay. Let's see. We've got some of your slate of the classic DC book. I did not read Harley Quinn or Secret Six. Okay. Robin, Son of Batman, number 2.
I did read this. I didn't make my. I didn't have a chance to type it in, but I did read it.
This helps to make a lot more sense of what's going on in this book, since the first issue really kind of left you out in the cold in the wilderness.
Yes. I wish this had been like a double-sized issue or something. I think I absolutely agree with your take on that, because this one really made things connect a lot better.
And I don't know if it was purposely done where the first issue just like, okay, let's ask all the questions, mm-hmm. and then in issue 2 you're given all the answers. But that's really what it felt like with this book. Okay, that's why that happened. Okay, that's why he's there. Okay, that's who that person is. You know, so all of that made sense finally now. And I found I enjoyed it a lot more now that I knew what the heck was going on and why he's, you know, out and about and doing these things. And especially this book, the way it's played out, you're jumping through time, mm-hmm. To his training with the League of Assassins and to what he's doing now. And the book even opens up with you wondering, what the heck is he doing? He's putting this head on a stone statue, and it's coming out and attacking him. You know, what the hell is this even about? But then by the time you get to the end of the issue, it all makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense that he's putting a stone head on a statue that's attacking him.
Right.
In this desert. Like, okay, all right, now we got it. So I did enjoy this a whole lot more. After reading the first one, I was almost ready to write off this series, but I figured I'd give it one more shot with the number 2, and I'm glad I did. I'm going to keep going with this one for a while because I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So my only critique about, you know, is of the art, because I thought that it was a little hard to follow at times.
Well, and that could also just be just that artist's style, because I've noticed his style is kind of like that from time to time, where it's a lot – I think it's going along that same road where you're not really sure what you're looking at,
mm-hmm.
and how the actions are playing out until you get through it. And then once you're at the end of the actions, then you understand what you were seeing with a random foot hitting someone in the face and something flying across a panel.
Right. So, I agree.
But yeah, it was definitely much more enjoyable than I was expecting after reading the first issue.
Interesting, interesting, interesting. All right.
Let's see. I also read Martian Manhunter number 2. I'm probably the only person in the tri-state area who did.
Oh, no.
But
I love that your tri-state area is not my tri-state area.
Too bad I don't live at the Four Corners. I could bump it up a notch.
Exactly.
But I'm enjoying this series quite a bit. I've always felt that Martian Manhunter was one of those characters that had a lot more potential than he's ever been given.
Right.
And this book is trying to actually do something with him. He is part of a Martian invasion. All of his memories about being the last of his kind and having a family who died in a, you know, horrific fire on Mars, all of those were implanted memories. They're fake. There's kind of a trippy quality to this story as well, because you've got another Martian character who's kind of old and stuck in kind of a half-human, half-Martian hybrid. He's been living as a homeless guy on the streets, waiting for the right moment, and he's not quite completely coherent. So when you pass that guy on the street who's mumbling to himself and looks really weird, he might be the Martian of the incoming invasion. But I did enjoy you kind of forget sometimes about how many powers Martian Manhunter actually has, right, and how he could use them in ways that make sense. And,
well, you know, what's funny is that when the last time I really remember the character getting a good push was in the mid-90s, and they definitely highlighted the fact that he was pretty much on par with Superman.
Mm-hmm. In the Justice League, International Justice League Europe, those days, when they were really using the character a lot, you really saw how powerful he was and how much stuff he could do. And then they just kind of forgot about him for a while. So I'm glad they're doing something with him again. I'm afraid it's not going to last very long because I have not seen a lot of traffic on this book, mm-hmm, and not a lot of people talking about it, which is a shame because it's got some fun stuff going on. And a lot of the characters that have been introduced in this book, the crazy homeless cricket, alien guy and his league of children, followers, it's just one of those weird things that you don't see in a lot of mainstream books. That's just kind of a fun thread to be woven into the story. And you do have a lot of just seemingly random stuff that you know is going to come together, that it feels like it's somehow connected, but you don't really know how or why yet. And I like that because I'm reading this going, okay, how is this going to go together? Like, I can feel, it feels like they belong in the same universe, but I'm not sure how they're going to work together. And I enjoy that type of thing when I'm reading it. So I've liked this book quite a bit.
And I, you know what, flipping through it, I respect the art that, you know, it's actually, it looks like it's very well done. It looks like it's, an asset to the book, so it looks like I'm going to be flipping through this.
Well, with the new 52 Martian Manhunter, right? They redid his ties to the Justice League, right? So they tried to make him much more of an outsider than it was before, right? Because in the old continuity, he was a founding member of the JLA, but now he wasn't a founding member anymore. He seems to be, you know, much more man on the outside. Yeah, maybe I'll pick it out. I mean, it's Williams, right? He's British, right?
We're talking about the writer, Rob Williams.
British, right?
I have no idea. I won't hold him that against him if it's true, but
And does Bloodwind show up here too?
No, Bloodwind yet.
I love it.
Although I did see him in Convergence, in one of those spreads where it shows all the different universes. I saw Bloodwind make a cameo, so he may be coming back at some point.
All right, cool.
But definitely worth checking out. Let's see what else.
Before we jump to Justice League, I was going to ask, did you read Doomed number 2?
I did read Doomed number 2.
Because my quick notes on this basically echo what you used to get me to read this, and my notes remind me that this is Scott Lobdell writing Miles Morales in the DCU with the Doomsday Virus, and now this is part 2.
Yeah.
And that pretty much is it in a nutshell.
That does feel... The one problem I had with this book is that this particular issue, it felt like a lot of retreading the same points again. Maybe because he thought more people, you know, didn't check out the first issue. Maybe they're checking out the second issue. I don't know. But it seemed like you got a lot in the first issue. You understood that when he was the monster and he spoke, people didn't know what he was saying.
Right.
And we got more of that in this one.
Yeah, but I think that's something that you have to see done maybe one or two times in different contexts to really get that point across. And I think that the part of the story that kind of took me for a loop was the hunter and the hunted aspect. You know, not realizing that was going to be part of the story.
Right.
Well, so that definitely took me by surprise.
I still feel like the characterizations and the dialogue and all of that is that is Scott Lobdell doing that Bendis style?
Yeah.
He is trying to make it much more conversationally than the cops with their little quips back and forth to each other.
I enjoyed that, but I felt like that had been done somewhere better. And and you had seen that in something pop culture-y, either a movie or a TV show, and he had basically lifted that.
But I mean, you get that with a lot of stuff, too.
Sure.
A lot of stuff is just taking elements you've seen somewhere else and trying to mix them in a new and interesting way.
Right.
And I think he's done that here, but the majority of this story, the bulk of what happens in this comic, happens in like a 5-minute span.
Yes.
You know, I got to the end of the book and I kind of felt like, okay, well, now I know what happened in that tiny little slice of his life, but can we move the story on a little bit more? Like, it was still enjoyable in that sense that he's ripping off the best parts of Miles Morales, mm-hmm, and trying to build this fun little story, but at the same time, it's like, okay, let's move it along a little. here. It didn't feel like it went anywhere really in this second issue. So
agreed.
Again,
we have to end very quickly.
I enjoyed the characterizations, but he's going to have to move this story somewhere a lot faster than he's doing in these first two issues.
All right. Now we can get to Justice League. Oh no, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Matt. Go ahead.
Oh, I have a question about Doom. Like, do you feel like this is going back to like this is a title that will get canceled after four or five issues, almost like sort of like, but will get resurrected by Geoff Johns like years later, sort of like Damage did.
If this can get pushed in front of the right eyeballs, it could last a couple years. I can see it being one of those books that's going to walk that line for a while, where it's like, does it cancel or does it stay? Mm. When they do that first round of cuts, because they always do those cuts, just like a sports team. It's like 6 months in, time to do some cuts. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those books that I think is going to walk that edge. And if it can survive the first round of cuts and it gets that second arc, that second lease on life, it'll make people go, okay, maybe I should pay a little more attention to this. And then if it can survive the next round of cuts after that, then I think it's got a good chance of surviving a couple years. Because it does seem like it's got a good heart to it. It's got that storytelling that people really enjoy. Because, we keep going back to Miles Morales. Miles Morales was a character that was for all intents and purposes made to fail, but he was such a likable character that the book, took off and kept going and reached markets that they never thought it would.
Right.
In many ways, it became more popular than what was going on in Amazing Spider-Man for a long time. So I think Doomed is one of those books where if it can survive that first round of cuts, that gets it more eyeballs. It gets people to pay a little more attention, and then it's got a good chance of surviving for a couple of years. But if it gets cut after six issues, then it may be one of those characters that you never hear about forever, 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 and then suddenly, oh, this Doom monster appears somewhere, and the Justice League's got to take it down, and that'll be the end of the character.
Just why do we – maybe you should join the Teen Titans.
But see, I don't like the Teen Titans. So,
or at least not this iteration.
Yeah, at least not what they've done with the Teen Titans, the New 52. Okay, so back to Justice League.
Finally, right? After I took us on a different path.
I really enjoy the storyline. This is one of those storylines that feels like this is why you have the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the satellites falling to Earth. This is not... mutant robot were-beasts tunneling out of the ground and devouring the small town. This is gods fighting for the fate of the universe and giant, powerful creatures and Batman becoming a god.
Mm-hmm.
This is the type of, bold, epic stuff that I want from my Justice League, and that's what they're delivering. And the artwork I just felt was incredible.
Come on, this is Fabok channeling every, every good part of Jim Lee, every good part of Silvestri, every good part of, all those, top Image guys, putting that into the Justice League. I agree, this was a phenomenally done, from an art perspective, book. I also agree with you, this is the type of Justice League story I want to read. I love the fact that this is definitely not in the current truth, just
yes.
Superman continuity. And
yes.
It's not in the current Batman continuity. This is, almost like what we were talking before about the Spidey book. This is the Justice League story that I think most people want to read.
Well, and it reminds me something that we talked about a long time ago with Convergence when it first started to hit, was that they had made some sort of statement that after Convergence, they're going to relax continuity.
Mm-hmm.
So that people have the ability to tell the stories that they want to tell, and you don't have to worry so much about the books bleeding into other titles. They can just kind of go off and do their own thing, and that's kind of what we're seeing here, is because you've got a depowered Superman, you've got a Commissioner Gordon in a suit of armor, you've got a rebellious Hal Jordan, you've got all of these other things going on in their titled books. But
I forgot about Hal Jordan.
You think of Justice League, you're getting your classic Justice League. You're getting your key characters as you have always known them,
mm-hmm.
Even though it's a new and different style of universe.
I wonder how long that'll last.
Well, hopefully that's just how they're doing things from now on.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so happy after reading this. It felt like, you're 8 years old and you're watching Challenge of Super Friends on Saturday morning. Like, this is your classic Justice League. This is your epic storyline.
Right, because it's on such a grand scale that, this is the Justice League story that you want to read.
Right.
That you feel like they're, it's appropriate for, this particular assemblage of heroes to be dealing with this kind of level threat.
And you've got your Superman. There's no one in the world, no one in the known universe more powerful than Superman. There's no one smarter than Batman.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm fine with that. In a story like this, that works. You know, people always say you can't do anything with Superman. He's too powerful. But in a story like this, this is how you want him to be.
Well, yeah. It's all about who he has to, who's opposing him. Who it is that he has to deal with. You know, because if he's dealing with, I hate to, you know, denigrate them like this, but if he's dealing with, Batman's rogues gallery, that's not really, it'll make for some of a good story, but not, you know, it won't be convincing, not like this.
Right. Plus, I want to know, what's Joker's real name? Because Batman found out.
Yeah.
He found out this issue, but he won't tell anybody, I'm sure.
Right. And unfortunately, it's not going to bleed into any of the other continuity books, so we won't see any other mention of it until Geoff Johns decides to bring it up. So,
can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
I just wanted to know, you know, how would you compare this to kind of the Grant Morrison JLA storyline, some of the big cosmic ones he did, and even maybe even Geoff Johns's JSA story, some of his storylines? You know, because I know they're obviously he's not the same kind of writer as Grant Morrison was, but you know, I just wanted your opinion on that because, you know, I am really liking this arc right now, and it just reminds me of kind of some of his old JSA stuff.
I think this would fit on that same shelf. Like, if you have some of those Grant Morrison stories, like, I especially loved his Earth 2 one, where you had the Earth 2 villains, or Earth 2, Earth 3 villains that came in to fight the Justice League in, what was it, in 98, 99, whenever that storyline was.
Mm-hmm.
And this, to me, feels like it's something on that same scale. And I'm enjoying it just as much as I enjoyed those stories. I think that this, when you do one of those collections in the future that's, you know, Justice League throughout the ages as you remember them, and they'll have the first story where they fought Starro, and then they'll have the one of those storylines from the 80s where they crossed over with Justice Society and did a, you know, crisis on Earth 2 or one of those type things, and then you'll have one of those Grant Morrison stories, and then you'll have like this story. Like, it's the same Justice League in all four iterations, even though they're different characters, they're different time periods, their powers might be a little different, you might have a different lineup of the team, but they all feel like they're connected. Like, there's a I don't know if you want to say, like, an honor to the characters and the stories and where they are. They are the heroes. They are the epic heroes, the grand heroes, and it feels like it fits along. Now, of course, we got to see how the story plays out. The final chapter might be garbage, and then we end up, you know, hating the whole thing, but where we are here in part two, it just feels like it would fit, you know, in that same realm, on that same shelf on your case, your bookcase, where you're going to keep some of those top stories. It does feel like it's playing out to be one of those type stories.
Right. I think the hard part for, you know, and this sort of echoes what I was saying earlier, you know, Justice League stories need to be epic, and it's kind of hard to keep telling epic stories. And so, you know, you sort of need that downtime, you sort of need that lull, that calm before the storm. And, you know, maybe that's where sometimes the story sort of, you know, we kind of lose interest until we get to something that is appropriately titled The Dark Side War, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it just, there just has to be, you know, some sort of balance to that where, you know, if you're reading Justice League, it's going to happen.
And even some of the issues that led up to this, where you just got, you know, Lex Luthor putting himself on the team and seeing how they interacted with Luthor and having Captain Cold as his head of security, and, you know, some of those things that led up to it, where they weren't epic storylines going, but he had to kind of lay a foundation for a story like this to happen. And even those stories were enjoyable, even if they weren't epic. But now we've got enjoyable and
epic.
Yeah, and that's where it just kind of, you know, blows out of the water, where it's just like, okay, now we got something. Now we're really rolling on something good here. And so I'm really digging this.
Cool.
I guess the only other thing I've got from DC is Superman Wonder Woman.
I did read this, actually. Didn't make it on my typed list, but I did read this. What'd you think?
And this is
in continuity.
Facing off against Suicide Squad, so there's your tie-in for the upcoming movie, trying to give them some extra screen time here. This book is more about, of course, the relationship between Superman and Wonder Woman, and it's interesting to see how they use something like this battle with Suicide Squad, not so much because a battle like that needs to happen, but because they need to put a conflict in between Superman and Wonder Woman, and that you have to put a wall kind of between them that starts to build. Because we got a teaser of an upcoming point where they're going to break up, where he turns to Wonder Woman and says, I'm not sure I love you anymore. And we know that that's coming at some point down the line, because that was one of those, you know, convergence reveals of what's going to happen in the next year forward in these books. And so the whole fight with Suicide Squad, it's a neat, fun thing. You can see Superman, you know, depowered as he is. Mm-hmm. He's bleeding. He's wounded. The bullets aren't bouncing off. They're now getting embedded deeper and deeper within his skin. So eventually one's going to go through and break, you know, break through and actually do him some damage. But all of that stuff that you're seeing with the character isn't as important as the way that the two of them react to these changes that are happening within them. So it's one of those things where you've got this, for all intent and purposes, this is the soap opera book. This is the relationship book. This is the, you know, how do these characters make the relationship work in the modern world, and they're superheroes and whatever. But at least it's not blowing me away with the story. I'm not like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing I've read this week. But it's still bringing up a lot of interesting things that you don't necessarily think about and you don't get in any other book. You're not going to get this type of story in Justice League. You're not going to get this type of story, you know, in a random issue of Wonder Woman. You need a book like this in order to play these interesting character points off of each other. And so that's what I enjoy about it. I don't think Superman Wonder Woman's ever going to be like a click of the week type title for me, but it's one that I always find myself reading, even when there are times like, oh, I'm not sure I want to pay $4, you know, for another comic, but then I'm sitting there thinking, but I do enjoy it on a certain level.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, academic review copies aside, right? I enjoy Doug Monkey's art on this. I agree with you in that, it, you know, the conflict with a sufficiently powerful opposition, you know, kind of gives you, helps you see what Wonder Woman is feeling at this point. You know, it's like, you know, they're dealing with, what was it, 30 cent bullets? Isn't that the reference?
Well, no, he makes his own bullets.
No, but a 30 cent piece of metal, I think Superman calls it. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, you know, the threat is sufficient, but at the same time, we also see, you know, the book describe where Superman is at currently, you know, in terms of his power set. So, you know, like you said, it's interesting to see, you know, Wonder Woman's take on what she has to do when they jump into battle, you know, at his current level. So, you know, that plays into the soap opera aspect, you know, afterwards when they're trying to, you know, rest and recuperate. So,
and one thing is, this issue in particular has a final page reveal that I don't think anybody saw coming, and I don't think anybody has any idea where this story is going.
Yeah, because they sufficiently hide who it is that he's speaking to.
And of course, because of location, you assume that who he's talking to would be one particular person, but because it's in shadow, you don't know who's actually sitting in that chair.
Exactly.
Who he's actually talking to. So is it someone who's infiltrated and is sitting in that office to show how powerful they are, or is he actually going up against the person who – is it one – I'm, you know, of course, I'm trying not to do any spoilers, but
I'll ring the bell just in case. Give me a second. All right.
But the person it looks like he's going up against is a real world figure, and so in order to, hey, there's Matt Wayne.
Hey, your camera's on, brother. There you go.
Just in time. So talking about real world people, there's a real world face for you. But he's going up against a real-world figure, and you don't know, because the character's in shadow, do they not want to show that real-world person? Because it is an actual, you know, all persons, you know, all likenesses, you know, someone living or dead or purely coincidental, you know, are they trying not to show this person just because they don't want that type of flack for picking on somebody, or is it someone else who's sitting there? So I like also that type of mystery that's coming. How exactly are they playing that? And that's on a level other than not just the story that's being told, but also as a comic book reader, as a retailer, as a collector, as a, you know, human being in the real world, I'm interested in how that's playing out on the publishing side of their company, as well as within the story contained in the comic book.
Right. I think we'll see very quickly in the next issue whether or not that really makes a difference.
Yeah. Or they'll do a whole issue of nothing but what Wonder Woman's doing, and then on the final page it goes back to him standing there looking at his book.
Exactly. All right.
Okay.
Do you have anything else on your list?
Oh, let me see. Let me scan through everything real quick. I don't think I read a single image book this week.
Black Canary?
I'm not reading that, but we can go to it if you got something for it.
Oh, no, it's just, you know, if you guys are fans of Batgirl, the new iteration of Batgirl, if you want something a little bit different, it's, you know, it reminds me of the, I didn't read it in the original run, but it reminds me of kind of like, you know, Dazzler, kind of the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're trying to do a different take on Black Canary, and, you know, so far it's been fun. It has, like, a little bit of an edge, a little bit of a different story. You don't get to see too much, and I don't know. I that appealed to me.
All right.
I've got one last quick one, because we are getting pretty late here.
Yes.
But I will drop down here to Oni Press. Where'd it go?
And one book Letter 44?
Letter 44.
Nice. Book I've been meaning to read and get into.
Dirt, I'll tell you, you're the one watching you, hearing you talk about this book made me pick, I picked it up on Comixology. I picked up the bundle because of you.
Uh-oh, so better live up.
Yeah.
I've loved it so far.
Yeah, well, and what we're getting in this issue, issue 18 here, is, you know, these events that we've seen building up are starting to play out. And give a little bit of background on the book. You've got these space explorers, these astronauts that have gone out to look at some sort of alien devices being built within our solar system, and they've gone to investigate that. At the same time on Earth, you've got World War III has broken out, and it's basically United States versus Germany, and Germany is working with a former president against the current president of the United States. And in the middle of the war happening on Earth and in the middle of what's going on with these people in space and dealing with this alien life that has, you know, come into our solar system, they find that there's a giant asteroid heading towards Earth. And it's an asteroid big enough that if it hits Earth, Earth is going back to the Stone Age. It's a huge, massive event coming. And they're desperately trying, the guys in space are desperately trying to reach Earth and get a signal through. And at the same time on Earth, World War III is breaking out. So everybody's allegiances are, being pulled in different directions. And all of the weapons that have been designed for fighting these aliens should they need to are now being used against each other. And so you've got all these political maneuverings going on. You've got power bases shifting to different groups. And in this issue, we finally see the resolution of two of those three threads. And just as you start to see everything start to culminate and come together, you get another wrench right on the final page. And so it's one of those stories where, you know, you've been leading up to, finally it hits. Things start to play out, you start to get resolution, and then bam, 11th inning, here comes this, you know, curveball home run that no one expected, and now everything's kind of back up in the air of what's eventually going to happen. So this is another one of those books that every time I think I've got it down, like I know where it's going, okay, I can see how this is going to play out, then boom, one more, you know, monkey wrench gets thrown into the gears and everything just gets shot to hell and you don't know where it's going in the next issue. This is also one of those books where the next issue very well could be the death of three-fourths of the life on planet Earth,
mm-hmm.
or everything could work out perfectly. You know, you don't know where it's going and how it's going to work, and I love that in a series like this.
Cool. I still haven't, you know, I have the trade. I have the trade, the first trade signed by Charles Soule himself, and he sold hard when I met him, and he was like, look, you got to get into this. So, you know, I've got to sit down and read it. It's in my to-be-read pile.
And you didn't. So we can
We read a lot every week, man.
I couldn't put it down.
I think it's great. I love the references. The spacecraft is called the Clark, like Arthur C. Clarke. I thought that was a great thing that they threw in there. Some of the aliens look like things that were described in the Rendezvous with Rama novels.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
So I grew up reading those Arthur C. Clarke novels. I love, you know, reading those old books.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, there's also that certain bit of knowing that he's a fan and I'm a fan, and there are those hidden little things throughout the series that I love running across.
All right.
Well, like I said, I don't know how... I don't know how you couldn't read. I couldn't put it down when I started reading it.
I have not cracked it open. I have the trade, the first trade. It's sitting there. I just haven't picked it up. If you could see my to be read pile, you know, I can't put a dent in it because of our weekly, our weekly show. So that's what you're gonna, what are you gonna do?
I'm gonna put the Transformers bundle on your pile too. You need to read that as well.
All right, Matt, do you have any books that you want to throw in that we didn't cover?
No, I think you guys covered everything I kind of read. I just wanted to say I just wanted to comment on a couple things you guys talked about in the news. I know it's late, but I just wanted to say how happy I am that Milestone's coming back. I was a big fan of those books and a big fan of Christopher Priest and those other guys. So.
All right.
Let me just throw out for when people talk about Milestone, they usually either talk about Icon or Static Shock as the books that they gravitated towards. I always liked Hardware. Mm-hmm. For me, Hardware was the book that resonated the most with me, and part of that may have been the Dennis Cowan artwork. I always loved his artwork.
I'm glad that you mentioned that because I felt like the art on Hardware was the one that was the book that was attractive to me.
Yeah, so I just wanted to throw that out there real quick for absolutely no reason except to say, hey, go Hardware. I hope Hardware comes.
Now, didn't Milestone use different paper? Because the coloring on Hardware was just like in all the Milestone books was basically.
I think at the time, they were toying around with doing the all slick pages, where a lot of the books were mm-hmm. still done on the newsprint. And so Milestone was one of the first where I think the whole line, the line wide, was done on that slick, higher quality paper. And even the first, I think the first issues of all of those were bagged with like a poster and a trading card, I think.
Trading card, I think.
Yeah.
You're right, yeah. If you're a big fan of the Hardware, you should read Christopher Priest and Dennis Cowan did a run of Steel that was basically, you know, it reminded me a lot of Hardware, but it felt much more like a Milestone book than a regular DC book, and it was a great, it was like about almost a 2-year run.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I had no idea. I'll have to go. I didn't know Dennis Cowan did Steel.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I think it was kind of in the late 90s. It was during that Superboy run when like it was like Jimmy Palmiotti was doing that run. I think it was around that era.
That may have been the era I was in college and had no money.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
He just needed to buy it all for you.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna go hunt those down.
They're probably in the back issues at the store. Come on, you know, they're there. They're buried.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, they're probably not in the priced back issues, but we have a room in the back full of random long boxes that we've bought over the years that haven't been inventoried. They might be in there.
Yeah, that's probably where they are.
Don't forget, Milestone had early Chris Cross. He was doing a Blitz Syndicate.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. All right, well, I think we can wrap up this week's show. We've had a lot of...
What about clicks? You have clicks?
No, exactly.
I was like, don't wrap up yet.
No, I'm not wrapping. I'm not doing the final wrap up, but I wanted to get to clicks of the week because we've had a lot to talk about and it's getting really late on the East Coast. So, I wanted to mention that Roddy Cat has chimed in with his click of the week, and his click of the week is Captain Marvel and the Carol Corps number 2. It's a solid choice. Solid choice.
Yeah, I almost went with that one as well. Because again, I really enjoyed that and really enjoyed the way it's unraveling the universe. Mm-hmm. And so I very well could have picked that myself. But sitting here talking about it, because a lot of times I make up my mind while we're talking about the books.
We all do. how rare is it that we have someone actually type their click of the week into the click of the week slot on the sheet, right?
Well, usually Roddy, just because he can't be here.
That's right.
But yeah, Justice League for me, that whole idea of these are the classic characters, the epic story, this is what I want out of a Justice League book is exactly what I'm getting. I'm going with Justice League 42 as my click of the week.
Nice. I definitely, I can endorse that. That's a great, great pick. I've already stated my pick early. I made my pick early because once I read it, I knew I wasn't going to you know, enjoy anything else nearly as much, and that's Hawkeye number 22. Long awaited, it was a very satisfying ending. You know, we had a lengthy discussion about it, and you know, it just served to reinforce in my mind why I liked it so much. I may very well be calling people bro for a little while tomorrow, and lady bro when I see ladies doing something I may not necessarily like. Hey, lady bro.
Are you going to get a tracksuit?
Well, you know, I may have to find some. I've got at least half of a tracksuit, and you know, like I've got track pants, so you know, I can pull off half of that, the Adidas suit. But
I will wear, if you get a tracksuit, I will wear it with you in your Comic-Con this year.
That'll be good. That will be good.
There's your cosplay.
Exactly. Although you can always convert it to Run DMC cosplay very quickly, you know. Matt, do you have
pull out the shoelaces?
Yeah, exactly. Matt, do you have a click of the week?
I was debating between Hawkeye and Siege number one, but I think because it's been a long 2 hard years, I will go with Hawkeye.
There you go. All right. So we've got our clicks of the weekend. We've got our recap of San Diego Comic-Con 2015. We've got, you know, I didn't know that we were going to get this in-depth into the books this week because it didn't seem like it was the biggest release week, but we definitely covered a lot of books that were out.
Well, we also had a lot of news. I mean, yes. News took up almost 2 hours.
Yes. We talked a lot of news. And we had a lot of technical difficulties. I apologize for that ahead of time. We started late because I don't do this nearly often enough, and I can't remember how to start things.
You were recreating the event and deleting the event, and the event and stopping the event. That was good times. See, that's the stuff we should have recorded. There's that whole conversation we were having, the Google Hangouts, trying to get everything working. It's,
yeah.
People need to see that at some point.
Is that a Blitzwing? Is that Blitzwing from Decepticon? Blitzwing, the triple changer?
Right here. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. I know my Transformers, so.
You can't see the combiners, but the combiners are over here, hiding with my Metroplex up on the shelf.
The classic ones or the modern ones?
Both.
Nice.
I've got two Devastators sitting over here, and then a bunch of knockoffs. Every time I'm somewhere and I see a knockoff Transformers at the Dollar Tree or Tuesday Morning or whatever, I always have to buy those. So I have a whole shelf of just the knockoff combiners as well.
Nice. Very quickly, Matt, did you happen to see anyone make out with the Devastator combiner that was like a big offer at San Diego?
They're limited to one per person. I had 5 requests to go get them. They're limited to one per person. I almost New York style mugged some guys. On eBay, I think it's double the price. No. I think they were selling for $120, and then on eBay there's $300 now or something.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, probably won't get one.
I did get the Entertainment Earth, the TRU exclusive was being sold at Entertainment Earth, Blue Streak. They had a piece version, and that was like $35. Like I was able to get one of those. Yeah.
All right.
But the Devastator could not even.
Yeah. So sorry to bring up a sore subject. Not being able to get, you know, one of the big in demand limited toys at San Diego. But I'm glad, Matt, that you were able to come on. I'm sorry?
I'm just going to get you a Devastator green tracksuit for New York.
Lord, that'll get us in the door so fast. So thank you, Matt, for joining us and giving us your personal recap of San Diego Comic-Con 2015. On behalf of Dirt, who you can reach at PCN_Dirt on Twitter and at PopCultureNetwork.com. On behalf of Tim, DOGG98 on Twitter and at TheClickNation. And on behalf of at RoddyCat and at NewsNerdsNeed and straight from Agent_70 on Twitter, this is the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, episode 128, and we are signing off.
Peace! Would you believe it? It's Dr.